Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? Guys, I...
Do you want to come and chat with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore.
It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Lights, Camera, Barstool was presented by Omega. Omega Accounting Solutions. If your business suffered significant financial losses or had to shut down in part or in full during the pandemic, you may be eligible for ERC, Employee Retention Credit, the powerful payroll tax credit. ERC was passed as part of the CARES Act to help small business recover from the pandemic. If you employed 5 to 500 employees and paid payroll during COVID, you may be eligible for a refund of up to $26,000 per employee. There are numerous subsidies, tax credits for big businesses. Large corporations have been taking advantage of these for decades. The Employee Retention Credit is finally a subsidy made exclusively for small businesses, but it has a limited window of opportunities. You got to act now. It's the time right now before the government's filing window closes and this refund is gone for good. Omega Accounting Solutions is a government tax incentive expert, and it offers services in business intelligence, fractional accounting, and analytics. Omega is a small business champion helping small business owners navigate the complexities of the accounting process, particularly for the immense opportunities around the ERC. Omega empowers small and mid-sized businesses and their owners to make informed business decisions through powerful accounting data, analytics, and insightful reporting. A 10-minute call to Omega's ERC specialist could help your company recover up to $26,000 per employee. Call Omega Accounting Solutions at 800-704-2000 or go to OmegaTaxCredits.com, O-M-E-G-A. I'm pronouncing that weird, I'm assuming. Just the way I'm saying it, it sounds like I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I'm not. OmegaTaxCredits.com. That's how you spell it. Go there now. Thank you to Omega for being the presenting sponsor of Lights, Camera, Barstool. Quickly here in the top of the show, my other show that I do, my trivia show, The Dozen Trivia Competition. Our good friend Gooch here, he helps produce it. Ken Jack has a team on it, named after the good Trill Ballins. We have a live show in Philadelphia, October 4th, Tuesday, next week. You can get tickets now, barstool.link. / Philly - dozen. It's also going to be in the description below, but it's barstool.link / Philly - dozen. Get tickets now. You can see a ton of Barstool characters
that you know and love. Nick, KB, good friends of the show. Brandon Walker, PFD commenter. Big Cat Roan, Fran, Tommy Smokes, Glenny Bald, Smitty, Stephen Che, competing live trivia, and myself hosting in Philadelphia in the massive venue. Buy tickets now. Would love to see you there. If you're an LCB fan, you see me there, let me know. Would love if you guys could go. Buy tickets now. We're also going to be in Boston on November 29th and New York the first week or second week of New York. So if you can't make it to Philly, make it to one of those. Thank you. Sorry for another ad read.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Bars, episode 54 of season 2. Jeff Deal alongside Ken Jack and Gooch. Chris out this week. He'll be back next week. We shifted things around this week. We're actually doing Don't Worry, Darling. The better movies, The Woman King and Pearl, we will talk about next week. Mm-hmm. But and I guess we're buying right into the shit of Hollywood, but we have to talk about the one that gets more pop.
Oh, yeah.
No interviews this week. We have two interviews next week, actually. William Shatner, Bill Shatner, and Boreanaz.
Mm-hmm. We made a song about that one time.
David Boreanaz is coming into the office, actually.
Oh, fuck. Should we show him that song? I definitely made a song about David Boreanaz.
Yeah, you did it to the tone of...
Hamilton, right? Yeah.
David Boreanaz is.
Yeah, that's right.
David Boreanaz.
I think may have somebody else.
I don't think is in.
No, Shatner is over the internet. We also may have somebody else from the MCU, a side character, but has a lot. He's in the movies. He's in a lot. We'll get to that.
It's Morpo back again for LCB.
Can you ask William about Boston Legal?
I'm sure we will. I'm sure it'll come up. I'm sure it'll pop up.
He's great next to Spader.
What else? I think that is it in terms of like housekeeping. So today, Don't Worry, Darling. We will also talk about The Rings of Power, talk about The House of the Dragon, and Andor. Andor came out 3 episodes. This will be a little longer of a recap on Andor, but we will be doing Andor thoughts and breakdowns probably as much as we do Rings of Power, maybe more, because I mean Kendrick, you are a big Rings guy, but I think Star Wars, we really big time Wars guys,
especially when it's something as good as Andor. Like if this was Boba Fett, we'd be spending a shit ton of time on it, but like Andor's so far very good.
Andor rips is the best way to put it. Andor's fucking all. I was nervous. I was very worried that people are not going to like, cuz it's very different. It almost doesn't feel like Star Wars may have gotten like hyperbolized.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like Star Wars. Don't get me wrong, but I was like, damn, I don't know. I could see people being like, this is tough. But we'll get into it because people do seem to like thoroughly enjoy Star Wars for adults, as some have put it.
Robbie Fox put it. He on the Long Take the other day. He said it's like PG-13 Star Wars. Like, it's not all the way to R, but it's like, you know. Shit. It's a good raunchy PG-13.
The first ever shit drop from the old naked miner dude from Chernobyl. Again, Jericho's favorite character.
He's also in The Batman, which I didn't realize.
Who is he in the... Oh, he was one of the cops. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I may have thought that he was... That guy was played by... what's his face?
Wait, you're talking about the different guy. You're talking about the skinnier dude. I'm talking about the heavier set dude, the Scottish dude in Andor. He's in Chernobyl.
He's also in The Batman.
Wait, so there's two Chernobyl guys in Batman? In The Batman?
The big guy, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Huh.
He's in The Batman. I thought that character in The Batman was played by Michael Stuhlbarg until like today.
Dude, that guy's so much heavier than Stuhlbarg.
I know, but I thought, but there's some fat suits in that movie. And not like he's had small, like he plays Commissioner Pete Savage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He has the beard, right? The one?
And Michael Stuhlbarg had about a 3-second role in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. So those are not beneath the acting size of Michael Stuhlbarg. So we'll get to Andor in a second. Pre movie news stuff.
Alex Ferns, his name. Cool.
2-1 for the NFL out of the three of us. My disgusting team won on Thursday. Rob, Gucci's won on
Sunday.
Monday. Oh, and like, you know, see, you can never win with the Browns. Myles Garrett got in a car crash.
What?
Non-life-threatening injuries in car crash. But he was,
is the car okay?
Yeah, literally.
To a local hospital. See, that's live. Like, you just can't win with the Browns. Fuck, that's crazy. Okay.
He said he's okay.
Yeah,
Chargers lost like 15 people to injury. Rashawn Slater out for the year. Chargers going on the IR. Guyton ACL tear. Fucking everybody's out. They lost four all pros since this season has started, and Keenan Allen and TE1 Parham. Everyone is dead. Everybody. And obviously Herbert too, with his fucking ribs. And then the fact that Staley in a blowout keeps Justin Herbert in just to get fucking massacred by Trayvon Walker is like one of the biggest mismanagements and most irresponsible things I've ever seen a coach do in my entire fucking life. And I watched Anthony Lynn put him in a QB sneak where everyone else dropped into pass pro. So it's a tough standard. And this is like the one time I think I've ever truly hated Brandon Staley was after this game.
All is right in the sports world when the Boston Celtics have a coaching sexual scandal and the Chargers locker room is just in fucking shambles.
Yep, that's about right. Horniest team in professional sports history, the Boston Celtics.
That was about as much of a disaster as it could have been for the Chargers.
Jags are a good team though, for whatever that's
worth. The Jags are good.
I said that from the entire week. Everyone's like, oh, fucking Chargers are going to blow up the Jags. I'm like, them and their spread, which was 7.5 in the beginning of the week. I was like, that was the easiest pick I've ever made in my entire life. That is so obvious, and no one else had it. Even at 3.5, I was telling people to take it.
The Bengals are rolling out their all whites on Thursday, and I just hate that.
they look awful.
I don't think they look as bad as I did at first, and now people really love them, so whatever, but if you lose in those, you know, if you lose in a bad fashion on Thursday night football in those uniforms, it's not good.
Yeah. Weird. I'm looking at them right now. I don't love them, but they're back on track. They won a game. That's football. That's football talk. Mm-hmm. Before we get into it, big news though, in the sports world, sort of, Dude Perfect released plans today for a brand new headquarters. Their current headquarters is probably the coolest office space in the world, by the way. It's unbelievable.
It's better than Milton.
Very, very fucking cool. They have a hockey rink, a basketball court, a putting green. It's massive. It's tall. They have ATV. They got all this shit. It's very fucking cool. If you've ever seen it, check it out. They're building like fucking Avengers Tower now in North Texas. Yeah.
Literally,
they're gonna have a 330-foot impossible shot tower. It's called Trick Shot Town. They got pickleball courts, rec space, basketball courts, all this crazy shit. It is insane. It's one of the craziest $100 million project. I'm not also kidding.
No way, that's $100 million.
Significantly like more. That was like a billion, billions worth
of like
project.
SoFi Stadium.
Yeah. And that's a $2 billion stadium. Get out of here.
Look, this doesn't shock me that they're building like a more massive public venue. Their sponsors are A1 billion-dollar corporate sponsors for years. Been the case for years. They get millions of views. They're on the Amazon. I can't even imagine the money Amazon gave them.
Atrocious. You don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, Thursday Night Football. With that said, this is still one of the most insane things I've ever read on Twitter. I was blown away when I saw this rendering. It is fucking crazy.
It legitimately does just look like Avengers Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. I don't know what the watchtower that they're probably going to have like snipers set up.
For what reason could they possibly need that much space? Like, it looks like, I don't even know how to explain it, like a futuristic theme park or something. Just don't get it.
Kind of food they're gonna have in there, that's the real question that can make or break a park.
You know, they don't eat well. You look at them like, and I don't mean they eat clean, they don't eat well, they eat like fucking
they're in good shape. They're all in good shape. Beardo was the only one who had like was a little heftier, and he's slimmed down significantly. I watch all their videos. Not all of them. I don't watch all of them. I watch all their like their legacy videos where it's like the classic like competitions. Those I'll watch. They do some other stuff that's not for me, but if they're going out and they're playing like golf with frisbees with Zac Efron. I'm like, I'm watching it. Like, I'm gonna watch that. I watch them do their all sports at Augusta National and piss everyone off. It's crazy.
Which one's your favorite?
No, they're gonna get. They're a live golf group if I've ever seen it.
I'm a Garrett Hilbert guy.
Ugh.
The Purple Hosier.
Yeah, I was going to say the Twins are easily the number one.
Kobe and Cody. Or Kobe.
The fact they have three guys, Cody, Corey, and Kobe, is one of the funniest things ever.
Like, made up. Like, you really couldn't parody that shit.
It's look it up. It's fucking insane.
How
also,
mad does
I will say, also, oh, cool. It is cool.
Yeah. It looks how awesome. That's I don't see how they get that made.
How mad does Rob Dyrdek have to be? Looking at that, like, he just like, fuck.
He spent decades building up being the Fantasy Factory guy, and then he just gets showed up by these like fucking weirdos.
He probably wishes he could be in the crew. He's like, get me the fuck away from Chanel.
Yeah, seriously. And he's on like MTV, and they're on like the country music channel or whatever, the Christian music channel, whatever that is. Like, well, they're also like, they do all that Christian stuff too. So, like, I would assume Dyrdek would think he has a leg up, but man, dude, perfect. Supremacy wrecking him.
Dyrdek is a Ohio guy. He's from
Israeli. Where are the Dude guys from?
Gotta be Texas, right?
Are they Texas guys? I have no clue.
They actually, as a stolen troll bones, but they actually feel like they're from Naperville.
Their headquarters, in Texas, but where they met at Christian summer camp in Sky Ranch. Where's Sky Ranch? Where the fuck? Where are they from? Oh, they were founded in Texas A&M, so yeah, I would assume.
They're Aggies.
There's no records of them existing before 2012.
Yeah, they like there's no birth or anything. They're just made in a tank. The panda mascot, which is a popular symbol at Texas A&M basketball games. Okay.
Yeah, they have a panda.
They're government plants. Keep us amused. Keep us from asking the real questions.
They hold 14 Guinness World Records. Do they hold it as a group? I thought like you'd have to be an individual to hold a record. Or like unless it was like something where you had to do it with two people, like Longest Kiss or something.
Dude Perfect makes about $20 to $25 million per year.
Mm-hmm. They have a whole tab in Wikipedia that's just legitimacy.
That's Otto Porter money.
58.3 million subscribers, 14.92 billion views.
That's disgusting. Jesus.
It's just insane. It's insane. And I still find some of their stuff entertaining. Not all of it is for me, but some of them I can't not watch. Crazy.
They collaborated with Sean Payton. What did they do with Sean Payton? I'd love to see
that. Their sponsored deals are crazy. I mean, like the NFL, like it's just big brands. Like that's like their ad deals must be fucking fat.
Oh yeah. I would love to see him do something with like a coach that just truly would despise doing anything with them, like Saban or something. Which those are my favorite commercials to watch. The Saban Affleck commercials where he's like held at gunpoint. Those are like the funniest commercials every time I watch them.
Listen to this one. Dude Perfect partnered with Serious Bean Company to develop a new flavor of baked beans.
No, you made that shit up.
I believe that. That sounds very Texas.
Dude Perfect baked beans? Bet you he's thinking about other women. No, I'm thinking about these Dude Perfect baked beans. What? Oh my God. They're real. Yes. Yeah, serious. Dude Perfect jalapeno and bacon pinto beans. The perfect bean with applewood smoked bacon. Jesus. These beans.
Crazy. This episode of Blake here in Barstool brought to you by Game Time, the exclusive ticketing partner of Barstool Sports. I recently used Game Time to go see the Browns give up 14 points in a minute and 30 seconds to the Jets. I'm actually glad I was there to see that. Somebody's like, ooh, must have sucked you were there. I'm like, I'd have rather have seen it in person than be like at the office around people. I was like, that was the more ideal scenario. At least I was like loaded up. Like, I would not have been like mostly tipsy and drunk at the game like I was. Like, I would have been sober eating probably like crappy takeout food in the office. That would have sucked. But because Game Time was there, I got to go and I had a great fucking time.
I went to a Panic at the Disco.
I was about to say, you used the Cooper concert.
Dude, it was awesome. And it might be like this isn't a huge shocker, I think, to anybody. Brandon Urie live, incredible. He has such a good voice. His voice is insane. When
did he play something?
He did all the hits, did not do covers.
At least not that I recognize anyway.
I think he did new album stuff I didn't know, but still.
It's very random, but he's got such a nice, like, throwback voice for a guy that came from, like, alt-rock punk. Like,
dude, how old do you think Brandon Urie is?
What?
How old would you think Brandon Urie is? He's, like, 41. 34.
Oh.
He's, like, 34. He's very young.
He, we interviewed him at Good Morning America, like, for our social pages, and we would give him questions from the internet, and he ate all the paper as he answered the questions. Like, he would take the question, you just eat it. He's nuts. He's, and also Ken Jack learned that it's a solo project now.
Yeah, I did not know that.
It's one of the more weird backstories. That's why if you watch The Dozen on Barstools, whenever I ask music questions, because we finally did a Panic at the Disco song, we ask who released this song. We don't say like what artist or band anymore, because some of the Panic at the Disco stuff is a band, some is not. It's like a weird distinction. But use Game Time to see that. So we've used it on concerts, sports, all that, and more. And right now you can download the Game Time app, all one word. Go to the account tab to create a login. Redeem code LCB for $20 off your first purchase. Last-minute tickets, great seats, too, and fucking cheap, man. You can find it's a great difference. And again, transferring tickets is a pain in the ass on most websites. Now Game Time. Very easy.
Oh, use the example of Greer when we were at the darts tournament. And he had to sit there swiping through 45 different tickets because he couldn't transfer them to everybody.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Not a problem with Game Time.
All right. We will. Sorry to do this to She-Hulk, but quickly off the top, She-Hulk thoughts. Just not worth diving into.
Patty Harrison's that's a W, in my opinion. She's so fucking funny. And she was pretty good. Limited screen time. But I mean, she was good. Another episode of just.
I thought it was the best episode yet.
Yeah, I mean,
more than the courtroom one with what's her name?
Well, that one didn't have nearly as much feet in it.
That's true.
Only one episode. I only think one episode of the show is like truly not good. Like, I was like, this is kind of bad. But I'll tell you what, it's just okay. And I'm also saying it's just okay for what it is too. So it's like we're really layering it there. But I don't know. I don't have a.
I've been saying lately how great it is that we're getting more weekly releases on stuff. This is a show that did not need to be weekly released. Like, if it all dropped at once, I think it would be way more enjoyable, probably. I don't know.
And I'll tell you what, it coming out around Andor is not doing it many favors. Andor has now raised the bar. Mandalorian did, but Mandalorian was like the first. So I guess it quote unquote set the bar, but Mandalorian just kind of happened and it was great. And then there was nothing else for a while. So Mandalorian kind of like moves in this like weird water where it's great and it gets nominated for everything and it should, but like it doesn't make other shit look bad. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain. Andor might do that because Andor already is making the other Star Wars shows look bad just by the set design, the quality of the writing, the story and everything. It's like, ooh, fuck. Like they can do a good job. So now they should do a good job. We'll talk about Andor more in a second. But Hellraiser. Hits Hulu on October 7th. First trailer, a take on Clive Barker's 1987 horror classic where a young woman struggling with addiction comes into possession of an ancient puzzle box and aware that its purpose is to
raise hell.
The cinema. Yeah, this trailer looks fucking... This was great. It's a great trailer.
Same creepy guy that made Nighthouse. Nighthouse was awesome. I think that was last year, right? That was a good-ass movie. I have that on Blu-ray, actually. It's a good movie. Today, I'm doing folks jokes. And I have one for old Hellraiser. I want to let you guys know I'm not that familiar with the Pinhead actress. It's a girl. And folks, a woman Pinhead, that's what I call my wife.
There it is.
Hot start.
It's not nice.
That one was on a fucking tee for you. the reaction
trailer was awesome.
The reaction trailer was great. And also kind of funny that this is another Disney movie that they're releasing on Hulu. And people are like, oh, this looks awesome. Now, imagine they do Prey, comes out on Hulu, not in theaters. Fantastic continuation of a existing franchise. And they do it again with Hellraiser. It's like, maybe put these in fucking theaters. But I don't know. This could be bad. We don't know. But the trailer was, I thought, great.
The Hellraisers after the original were pretty shitty. But, I mean, this trailer was, I kind of like it. I don't need to see more of the Cenobites or whatever they're called. They are some of the most disgusting creatures ever made.
I need to watch the original because the original terrified me for so long because Pinhead just a terrifying, like existential dread of a character to look at.
The hooks, man. They're so scary. Like the hooks just shredding people up. The dude with no skin just laying on the floor. Like, ugh.
Also, speaking of Disney Plus, like streaming weird shit or just Disney streaming stuff, Kinjak, you see they're doing Bleach, like the anime. They have that anime for some reason.
How'd they get?
I don't know, but it's going to be streamed on Disney Plus.
How the fuck did, like, that seems like the most Crunchyroll thing to HBO I've ever seen. Yeah. How is that possibly bought by Disney? Why would that be bought by Disney?
Whatever. I don't know how, but
they seem like they would buy like one of the more kiddie type enemies than that. Whatever.
No, Hellraiser. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it looked creepy, looked well made. I saw a couple people who I follow who like stuff like this a lot, and they said, oh shit, this looks actually good. So I don't have much more on that other than the fact that that'll excite me. Like, I don't have like an affinity for this story or this movie, but like, I think it's an interesting character. We've always noted on this pod, we've talked with Pinhead before. We do like drafts with like creepy characters. You, if I see a fan say it looks good, great.
I'm into that. Horror fans are real, real big, Hellraiser, like real horror fans.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so that's that on Hellraiser. John Bernthal rumored to be returning as the Punisher in Marvel's Daredevil Born Again series. Thoughts?
Wait, yes. Which one is this?
John Bernthal.
Fuck, I didn't see this on the script. I had no joke for this. You didn't have it on the script. You went off script and you fucked me, Jeff. What the hell?
No, this is on the script.
Oh, God damn it.
Come on, think of one.
Did you base it just on the trailers?
Yes, everything sent in the chat.
All right, so this, okay, no, all right, so no, you're off the hook for these.
God damn it,
you're off the hook for that. Thoughts on this though?
I mean, like, yeah, excuse me for that. He's the clear, like, I don't think you can do Punisher for like a decade if you don't have him, because people are not gonna like, especially fans of the Punisher, they love John Bernthal and they don't want to see anyone else take that role. So they're doing the right thing here. Hopefully the Daredevil series stays at least somewhat true to what we got from the Netflix series and that dark tone. I don't think they're obviously going to go that dark, but they can do a little bit. I think fans will end up liking it, especially with John Bernthal back. Apparently it was supposed to be Jessica Jones, but Kristen Ritter had a scheduling conflict. And she can't do it.
Yeah. Surprised Bernthal, I feel like, has better projects going on. I'm surprised he wanted to like commit to this for reasons other than money. Like, he does so many great things, like beyond just obviously, like, you could go to his HBO catalog. I mean, We Own the City is fucking incredible. He does that podcast.
Hopping on the Bear for like 5 minutes,
20 seconds. Great fucking, like, you want to talk about like pound for pound, great punch right there. Like, that was like every second he's on screen, he absolutely killed it. And I love Bernthal, but like, I'm surprised he's into this for reasons other than money, but although he does know the fans love him in that role so much. I just like to see him branch out and do other shit, do more Sheridan movies, do more stuff like We Own the City stuff, because he is just truly one of this world's great chameleons. And I also can't wait to watch him in that movie where he's a gigolo, which is, I forget the name. Is it just Gigolo? I forget.
That's a Showtime series.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought that was a movie. Damn.
Yeah, I think it's a limited series.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I am surprised. I think this is gonna happen, but it is surprising that he would do it. He's had some quotes.
Character. We talked to him about it a little bit.
But he's had some quotes about the MCU where you get the vibe that he is not a fan of kind of like the overall vibe.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if he'd want to go back and do that with Disney, where they're going to kind of not like handicap it or anything, but definitely do it more G-rated than it was on Netflix.
Him trying to find the people who killed his family. They're right behind me, aren't they?
Who the frig hurt my friggin' wife? His wife's not even dead. She's just like in the hospital for the entire season. I'm not looking for it. Yeah. Just as long as it stays true to what Netflix was doing, at least, then I think it'd be in good shape.
They said apparently Jessica Jones they wanted, but it didn't work out through the timing, so she may appear somewhere else. So it seems like he'll be the character that returns for this from the Netflix universe. Also, casting for the next James Bond is still underway, and they say it's going to happen for a couple years. And they said you got to commit for 10 to 12 years. That doesn't seem very shocking to me.
I mean, it rules out a lot of the people everyone liked, like Idris Elba and all that. So that kind of rules them out.
Yeah, because you can't do old Bond again, right?
Yeah, no, young Bond. They need a good young Bond.
Who do you guys want?
I was saying I would love it to be like young 20s Bond. Like, not origin story, because I feel like we got that kind of a Skyfall even, but like somewhere between that and like, or maybe like, so okay, so like mid 20s.
maybe you're like close to 30 Bond. I'd be interested in that. And him's like a mentor figure.
Giving him a mentor figure? That would be interesting. Have they ever done that with the Bond series? I don't think, right?
Never, not that I ever know of, no. Like he, I guess he thinks of like, not Q, M as his mentor a little bit, but like a field agent mentor, I'm thinking. You know what I mean? I was saying like, imagine a Jeremy Irons as a mentor to James Bond in a Bond movie. I feel like that'd be sick.
Need more Jeremy Irons and more stuff. I could listen to that man talk for hours
about anything.
So that's the James Bond quick news. And Punisher news as well. Now to some trailers. So Ken, Jack, you're prepped for this. Don't worry.
Yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan's new movie, Knock at the Cabin, starring Dave Bautista, Jonathan Groff, Rupert Grint, who starred in M. Night Apple TV Plus show.
Just good. Good
February 3rd. Yeah, he was in The Office. Yeah. While vacationing, a girl and her parents are taken hostage by armed strangers who demand that the family make a choice to avert the apocalypse. Ken Jack?
Just as far as an actual take, I'm not enthused that M. Night said it was the fastest he's ever written a script in his life.
Yeah.
That kind of gives me a little bit of like a hesitation, doesn't it? Like, hey, you got, I know you guys, I might have thrown out a few stinkers out, so, but hey, think about it this way. At least I wrote this one really, really fast. It's like, I don't know if I take a lot of solace in that. But folks, Knock at the Cabin, that was the original title for United 93.
Ugh.
Jesus Christ.
God, that was a good one. Come on.
Yeah, that's a very good.
It's dark, but it's good. The second
it is. That's much darker than the last one.
It gets worse.
Oh my God. Yeah, that took a turn. Let's just do this. What's the twist prediction? Dave Bautista says, but if you didn't see the trailer, he says, you got to make a choice. You make the wrong choice, the world ends. Twist prediction.
They're gonna have to kill someone. Like one of them's gonna have to die, or one of them's gonna have to kill their daughter, or some shit. Like, I just don't know what.
I mean, I feel like the obvious twist is that like they're just making it up.
Yeah,
but that seems very The Village-y, right?
Yeah,
the daughter kills Dave Bautista at the end. That's the twist.
Mm.
It's a prequel to that Dave Bautista movie with
Stuber.
Well, no, not fucking Stuber with what's her face?
I like Stuber.
No, with the little girl. Yeah, yeah. Fuck, I forgot the name of that one. Spice. It's two words. I just can't remember.
It's with
it's where he's training the young. He's a spy and he's training the girl. My spy. Yeah. Damn it. Fuck.
My spy. Fuck. I don't know this. I don't know. It'd be cool if M. Night ripped like a really good new like original movie.
I mean, the weird thing is like, I mean, we shit on. I forget what was the last one, Mr. Glass. No, Old Beach was terrible. But Split was pretty good. Like,
yeah, but you consider that, off the rails. I mean, it's original. It's original, but it is connect. It was connected to Unbreakable, but only
loosely. Like
at the end, yeah,
yeah. If he just did it unconnected, it would have been like not better or worse, but like I think it could have been a little more interesting. I guess that follow up to it was pretty bad, though.
It can't be as bad as The Last Airbender or The Happening.
No, it just can't be.
Or After Earth or Lady in the Water.
There are so many examples; it's crazy. I'm
setting a theme here.
Go birds.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm the prison warden for some reason.
Nah,
that's a great Family Guy bit.
Not
do you pay Joel? Decision in the movie is going to be to pay Joel Embiid. Pay him. make the decision.
The movie's just called The Process.
That's M. Night's Knock at the Cabin. Next up, how about this? A new movie from Alejandro Giannarritu, who won back to back Best Directors for first Birdman or, in parentheses, The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. We'll get to that in a second.
This guy loves long titles.
Yeah. The Revenant, he went short. He's back with Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths.
It's the worst title I've ever heard.
Oh, I love it. I love shit like this. Like, this is snobby, I just hung my second shelf of Criterion movies in me, which I did do yesterday. Loves this shit. Follows a renowned Mexican journalist and documentary filmmaker. Yeah, filmmaker who returns home and works through an existential crisis as he grapples with his identity, familial relationships, the folly of his memories. This looks trippy as hell. Looks wild. I don't even know what to say. There's a longer synopsis, but it's a little too, like, it's a little too deep to read into it. Like, I don't want to give away anything because I think this movie is intriguing on its own. The people who are in the movie are going to be unknown to Americans. They're Mexican actors, it seems like, for the most part in the movie. I don't know if this was – I don't think it's a one-take movie. He obviously did the one-take Birdman, one-take Revenant, but it has clearly long takes in this movie. Mm-hmm. It looks incredible.
Yeah.
It looks unbelievable. I don't know how it's going to be, but holy reviews, shit, visually speaking, wow.
Reviews are very in between. It's like 50s or something on Rotten, or I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know how good it's going to be, but it will look – yeah, it's sitting at 53% with like 30 reviews. It's been a couple years since it came out of the last movie too.
I think the one review I saw was it was like it's like walking on like a fine line between being like super self-indulgent and being like very, really brilliant. It's like right in between that zone. It kind of like falls off on either end sometimes.
It's also 3 hours long.
Yeah.
It will come out on Netflix after it hits theaters. But we'll see. I don't know. Critic reviews tough. Maybe I'll like it. I don't know.
He's a director though, where like if the critics don't like the movie,
that's
like,
very true.
My faith in the audience liking it is so low.
I mean, I could see this being bad on based on Birdman, and I think Birdman is one of the best movies I've ever seen. But Birdman also, you talk about walking the fine line. Birdman walked that tightrope perfectly because one little thing in either direction, and that movie could have been a disaster. Yeah. And it was not. It was like nearly perfect. But the creative like vision of him, because I actually didn't love The Revenant personally. I was not a big Revenant.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Nice to look at, but boy.
Party was good.
Boy, was that movie slow.
As was, well, Leonardo DiCaprio is also really good in that. Like,
so that's
Oscar worthy.
Where's your joke? Where's the Bardo?
This one was really hard. Is the weakest one. I was going to say, folks, I got all excited when I saw the title because at first I thought it was a movie about Dude Perfect.
Title. You gotta have really good knowledge and backstory of our lore.
The Venn diagram is like, it almost doesn't even touch the circles.
The title is longer than a what? CVS receipt.
A CVS receipt, yeah.
Fuck, I like that. I like that one. That's a significantly tamer joke than the United 93 one.
Get ready. Get buckle up. That was the...
The United 3 one is the clear winner so far. This episode brought to you by 3Chi. You got long road trips that you're taking to recreational states, overpriced dispensaries, all that. Guess what? No more. 3Chi offers premium THC products that get delivered straight to your door, including dispensary-grade Delta 9 THC. With the same effects as traditional marijuana, hemp-derived, make it fairly legal, and that much easier to get your hands on. The best part, 3Chi, giving you 5% off all products. Use code STOOL5, STOOL5, at 3Chi, number 3CHI.com, and experience cannabis perfected now. Must be 21 to purchase. Great products, delicious too. And this will get you high. This is not CBD. You may fall asleep with it, but don't take this and be like, and normal day ahead, like you will get high. Cookies are delicious too.
Mm-hmm.
Cookies
are really good. They make CBD. You can actually get like a powder. You can take their cookie, sprinkle the powder into milk, and dunk the cookie into 3Chi milk. Basically, there's a life
dangerous combination. Yeah.
Also, I was in New England this weekend, and once again saw the power of Dunkin' Donuts when you go to New England.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I saw you tweet out the picture. It made me crave donuts so bad.
People like good donuts. So mad too. They're like, I gotta get like, oh what? Well, no, you got to try mom and pop. I'm like, I'm not saying it's better than your fucking mom and pop shop. In the middle of Massachusetts. That's probably better. I'm talking strictly chains. When it comes to chains, the difference between Dunkin' in New England and everywhere else is crazy.
It's insane. I got Dunkin' Donuts this morning, and like, it's disgusting that they can even brand themselves Dunkin' Donuts in the city. Like, it's borderline fraud. When you go to like a Massachusetts one and like taste what they make there and then go taste it anywhere else, it's
the
like
lady wheels the cart out with the donuts. And she says, careful, when you close the box, I just frosted them. I'm like, geez, that's great to hear. Like, that fucking rules. You made those. in New York, they ain't making the donuts in the back. I'll tell you that right now. Those are not being made in the back. Yeah, Dunkin' in New England, just their donuts. Their donuts specifically are just, they're fresh. And most of them. There may be one or two that don't do it. But yeah, the coffee.
I hate artisanal donut shops. I hate them. They're never
there's
that
few I've been to. There's one called Duck Donuts in New Jersey I've been to. That's pretty good. I got to admit, like,
I live next to one that like a bunch of influencers go to. It's called like the Donut Project. And it is just the most pretentious
like
shit.
Project.
That's the most like artisanal donut shop name
my
in New York
donut place
I've ever heard.
In the city is Donut Pub. Donut Pub is
Are good.
Is that cousin to the Bagel Pub?
I wouldn't call Donut Pub artisanal though. I would just call it a donut shop.
The like, have you ever gotten dough? I think it's pretty good. They're big, but like I think they're pretty solid donuts.
You will always be graded on two things: your glazed and your chocolate. Yeah. Those are the two big ones. I don't need any other stuff.
I haven't tweeted a side by side, but I took a picture of New York Dunkin' chocolate sprinkled or sprinkled donuts. You know, in Family Guy, Star Wars, I'm like, what are you paying by the laser when they say like hold your fire? It's like they're paying by the sprinkle in New York. It's like holy shit, just put more. New England, those things are doused. It's crazy.
You know, it still disgusts me in any way you spin it. Could be from any donut shop, Boston cream donuts, or any sort of cream filled donut. Like, just makes you want to fucking puke even thinking about taking a bite into one of those.
I don't like them. That's
especially
not my
Dunkin' though. It feels like I'm eating. I always use this comparison. It feels like I'm eating one of the bugs from The Lion King. You know when you take the bite of them and all that that fucking gut stuff like sprays out. That's what it feels like to me.
I posted that take. How people got upset. There's family owned Dunkin' outside the city. Yeah, that's not the point.
Who cares?
Like New England, they're like the family is fucking there. In Austin, Texas, there's a chain of Dunkin's owned by one person. I won't say who. Might have played quarterback at the University of Texas. Might have got his arm deaded against Alabama national title game. Great person. He ain't in the back of those Dunkin's cooking up the donuts. It's crazy. The difference is nuts. I think it's one of the biggest discrepancies in chains region to region.
Welcome into 60 Seconds with Bob Guccman, where today we're joined by the star of the heavily criticized Don't Worry, Darling, Harry Styles.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Now, Harry, can you tell me in your words what went wrong?
You know, I was nervous heading into the weekend, and my fears were confirmed by Sunday night. I made a last-second decision to start David Montgomery over Hollywood Brown in the flex, which killed me. The only real bright spot in my lineup was Davante Adams.
I'm sorry. What are you talking about?
My fantasy football team. Larry's house, of course.
I'm confused.
Well, I've been in the league for about 7 years now. My first year, I drafted Larry Fitzgerald in the first round, which is where I got the idea for the name. In fact, my most recent studio album, Harry's House, is an homage to that squad.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's half-point PPR, 10-squad league.
Do you know who Stephen Shea is?
Well, that's all the time we have here on 60 Seconds. Until next time, I'm Bob Guccman.
Last three trailers. Enola Holmes 2. We actually recorded in the evening today. I'm glad we did because we got a couple trailers we would have been able to talk about in the morning. Enola Holmes 2, Millie Bobby Brown back, Helena Bonham Carter back, Henry Cavill, good boy back as Sherlock. Did you like this movie, Gooch? Ken Jack and I did.
Oh, I loved the really first good. Enola. In terms of like, it's just a very enjoyable movie. Great, nice little adventure movie for the family.
Yeah, this comes to Netflix November 4th. Now a detective for hire, Enola Holmes, takes on her first official case to find a missing girl as the sparks of a dangerous conspiracy ignite a mystery that requires the help of friends and Sherlock himself to unravel. I don't have much to say on this, just excited to see it. I love the first, but hopefully the second's just as fun.
Yeah, I think the one thing I... Go ahead.
Henry Cavill looks like he just has a lot of fun doing this. Like,
right.
He looks like he enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Like, they both look like they're having a lot of fun doing it, which I can't say for all their other projects.
Yeah. I think the one thing I said during the review of the first Enola Holmes was like, this is like the first time I watched a movie and I was like, I really want to see a sequel to this. Like, this is like a start to a franchise or whatever that I really want to see another movie to. So like, pretty pumped up. I don't know. I'm just into it.
Yeah, as good as it gets for Netflix, for sure.
Yeah, it's true.
Movies, like, can't ask for much more.
Yeah. And folks, I will warn you. I was reading an early review by a guy that destroyed this movie. But you know what really destroyed Enola Holmes 2?
Jesus Christ.
That's tough.
You can even bleep that one if you want. I just read it and I was like, Matt, the first thing I thought of.
That one might get the bleep. I don't know why one with this one would.
They're both pretty bad, but it was the first thing I just thought of when I saw the name. I was like, I can't avoid it now.
When I posted the trailer, one account commented, it was like, no one gives a fuck about this movie. And I checked who said it, and it was FEMA.
It's George W. Bush.
We're gonna bleep the joke just so you can hear what they just said and see if you can put the joke together.
Yeah,
I was gonna say just leave it at this point, whatever. Now you gotta bleep it just for
make it funnier
from that. Last two trailers. They cloned Tyrone. Stars Jamie Foxx, Teyonah Parris, John Boyega. Netflix in December. A series of eerie events thrust an unlikely trio onto the trail of a nefarious government conspiracy in this pulpy mystery caper. Thanks for that add-on there, Netflix. Clearly called that themselves. Thoughts on this trailer?
I thought it was kind of awesome. Like, especially that opening bit on the elevator with Jamie Foxx just singing. I thought that was cool.
God. I'm happy John Boyega's like back working again. There's a little period there where I was getting worried. I was like, damn, he's just getting negative headline after negative headline. He's back working now. Mm-hmm. He was great in The Woman King. So great. And this looks like it just looks fun. I don't know.
I'm just happy he's leading in this, because in Woman King, I feel like he got buried in that movie, which is fine. Like, the movie wasn't about him and his character, but like, I wanted to see more from him just because he's been, you know, just the subject of all that shit you've been talking about. I will say it's not totally promising that the person directing this is the same guy that wrote Space Jam 2, but he also wrote Creed 2, which Creed 2 was pretty solid. And I think his name is like Jewel something, which is kind of funny. I kind of like that.
I'll look him up now.
Yeah. So mixed bag. Yeah. They cloned Tyrone.
Final thoughts on They Cloned Tyrone?
Folks, Jewel. I think this movie, it's going to be pretty good. You want to know why? Because every clone's favorite letter is W. W.
Oh, my God. My brain.
God, I love doing this.
My brain was stuck on George W. Bush, and I was like, is George W. Bush a clone? Like,
man, are we going two GW jokes back to back? And lastly, big one. HBO's The Last of Us series adaptation, first trailer, full trailer. Pedro Pascal, Bella Ramsey, Nick Offerman, and more from the creators behind the minds of Chernobyl, who also, by the way, Craig Mazin, right? Am I saying?
Yep.
Yes.
For a second, I said, is it Greg? No, it's Craig. He did a great podcast with Damon Lindelof during the release of Watchmen. If you ever rewatch Watchmen, I would suggest listening to Craig Mazin and Damon Lindelof talk about Watchmen episode to episode. It makes the rewatch of Watchmen that much better. Joel and Ellie, whatever. It's the fucking Last of Us. What do you think? I'm not a Last of Us guy. Not saying I don't like it. I just didn't play the game.
Never played it.
Thoughts, Ken Jack?
I think there's like four things that are very, very good about this movie. The first is that it's on HBO, because the IP is super violent, very raw. And HBO, as far as like production value and their ability to go to those places, great. The second is that Neil Druckmann, who created the game, is an executive producer. He's a writer, and he directed, I think, an episode or two in the series, which is so rare in the movie game, in like the movie adaptation of video game genre or show adaptation, because usually it's just left to some guy who's like never played the game, like with Halo. Like Halo, that director's like, yeah, I don't know, I never played it, but it seems interesting. The third is that Craig Mazin, like you just talked about, he made Chernobyl, maybe the best miniseries ever made. And then like Pedro Pascal, that's a winning dude. Like, he doesn't ever really hand in a bad performance. And I think that you'd be pretty hard pressed to find a character that's more like Joel than the Mandalorian is, just structurally, when you really think about it.
You also forgot to mention that Craig Mazin also wrote Scary Movie 4.
Fact.
Yes.
He's got range, man.
He's the one who came up with the joke of Charlie Sheen overdosing on Viagra and falling on his dick out the window.
That's Jeff's favorite joke, I think, from Scary Movie, right?
That
falls off on his dick.
When Charlie Sheen falls off the balcony and lands on his massive boner. Yeah, no, this looks sweet.
Yeah, four is routinely my favorite of the bunch.
Mm-hmm. I saw someone who's like a kind of like a Hollywood insider was tweeting about it, and they were saying like the word within HBO has been for a while now that this is like a big deal for them. Like they think they've got something like a massive hit here.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, that, so
I know it looks incredible. The clicker looked dead on. I thought
the movement of it like was dead on too. Like that was crazy.
The sound design, that was one of the best parts of the game, which is weird to say, but that sound design of like just the clicker that still just causes me like visceral like fear, like fight or like immediate fight or flight like reaction hearing mm-hmm. that little.
It creepy. Definitely gets there. I'm pretty much into it. Folks, last one. I love The Last of Us, but it came out when I was already an adult. But when me and my buddies were younger, we would play a different game. Get in a circle, pull out a cookie, and play Last to Bust.
Boo.
I mean.
If I could have switched around the trailer order to make the Enola Holmes one last, I would have.
Last to Bust. That's a good way to end it.
God, I love doing those so much.
Right into the ad read for Everly Well.
Writing bad jokes, I think, is so much more fun than having to write like legitimately good jokes. Like it's just so much more fun.
Everly Well, sponsor the pod. When you know more, you can do more. And if you got science to help discover more about your body, why not use it? Everly Well is doing that for you. It's a digital healthcare designed for you, all at an affordable price. At home lab tests. You don't gotta go anywhere. You're able to choose a test that makes most sense to get answers. Like a men's health test, thyroid test, which I've said on here many times. We know people who have found thyroid issues, and it changes a lot. It really does. It changes so much of just your daily activity and routine and how you feel. It's a big one. Food sensitivity test, food allergy test. Think you're allergic to something? Go for that. We took the food allergy test too. Fuck it, I'm allergic to bananas, man. That sucks. Bananas are delicious.
Mm-hmm. Banana.
And banana flavor. And I can't go see the Minions. I'm not like a Minion fan because of it. Ships products straight to you with everything needed in one package. You take your at-home lab test, simply collect your sample, use the included prepaid shipping label, all that and more. And then your physician-reviewed results get sent to your phone or device in just days. Find out right away, basically. And you can share the results with your primary care physician to help you guide the next steps, all that and more. Again, we talked about the ones we've taken, the men's health, taking the thyroid run, and, of course, the food allergy one, as I mentioned. Again, allergic to bananas. Everly Well is offering a special discount of 20% off at-home lab tests at everlywell.com/LCB. That's Everly, E-V-E-R-L-Y, well.com/LCB for 20% off your next at-home lab test, everlywell.com/LCB. You can also, you may have seen these in some retailers across the country as well, Rite Aid, Walgreens, Targets. Same thing, and a bunch of different tests that you can choose from. Wellness, sexual health, women's health, men's health, all that. And more vitamins and the likes. All right, House of the Dragon, let's start off with. Episode 6 of House of the Dragon. There are 4 more episodes after this. This is the halfway point, and we have had a 10-year time jump with significant recasts. We now have Olivia Cooke playing Allison, was previously played on the show by Emily Carey. I still think she looks older than Olivia Cooke. I don't think this character looks like she aged much at all. They look alike.
She has a full-grown son that looks older than her.
Yeah, Olivia Cooke is a younger-looking actress. Olivia Cooke is, like, our age.
Yeah.
And Emily Carey is not at all. Emily Carey is 19 now. But Emily Carey, like, looks as old as Olivia Cooke. It's just weird. I don't know. Not a complaint. It's something that I visually, like, haven't gotten on board on. However, Olivia Cooke, great in this, I thought.
Dude, crushed it. Crushed it.
Specifically the scene where she receives Rhaenyra's newborn, and she takes it. There's a couple other characters as well, but takes it And walks over and says, maybe the next one will look like you. What is that? Whatever her line is.
Yeah.
Oh, just a great. Yeah, that was a great line. Because Lenore, he was recast as well. New actor, Matthew Carver. Anyway, yes. Thought that was great. Thought she was solid. Other side, Emma Darcy replaces Millie Alcock, who played Rhaenyra. This one I also thought was pretty damn good. Let's just start off, though. Let's say the big thing, how we all felt about it. I like this episode. Time jump didn't bother me at all.
Not even a little.
However, it does not seem as though that's the consensus opinion.
I saw Trent got really pissed off. He's like, I'm out on Thrones now because of the time.
Yeah, our other Barstool podcast, Game of Stools, Trent, who does Foreplay podcast, other things, the golf podcast. He, by the end of the episode, Robbie Fox, our friend, said he came around to it. I didn't have an issue at all during the episode with it. I thought it seamlessly worked for me. You introduce a lot of new characters and stuff, but I don't think they had any issue. I don't know. I didn't feel lost.
I would have gotten. I wish we had gotten a little bit more Harwin, but that's the only. That's really my only complaint there in terms of the time jump.
Yeah, I think
that opening. Kenjack, you tweeted it. That
long take, sick
one take.
Yeah,
my God, that's one of the better sequences Game of Thrones has done in. I mean, going back to their previous two seasons, I mean, that's as good as it gets. That was amazing.
I was going to say that's probably the best single shot to ever, at least from a technical standpoint, to come out of Game of Thrones, other than maybe like the Battle of the Bastards zoom out. Like, from a technical aspect, like super, super impressive.
And when it stops on the stairs and like it's whirling around, that was amazing.
Really, really good. I think this is my favorite episode of the series by like a pretty wide margin. And I think that both new actresses. And it's not fair because both those other actors are much younger. I think these two are significantly better than Millie Alcock and I don't even know the other person's name. It's not, again, these two actors are way older, way more experienced. It's fine. It's just like now we're in more of a throne zone. And this episode just feels so much different than those. And it's almost, I wish they just started at this point. Like, I feel like all the information learned in those first five episodes could have been basically peppered in throughout this episode and we would have really lost a beat at all. And I think that the series probably would have been better off for it.
It's a fair complaint. I think they could have compressed it definitely down probably into three episodes, like going through those. I think what they're going for to, you know, create that bond between you and the characters is what they're going for. And I think it worked. Obviously people became very attached to Millie Alcock's Rhaenyra. But maybe it did run a little long. Like you said, though, it just doesn't bother me. It just feels like pilot number two almost. And we're just ready to go. I'm Team Blacks. I don't know about you all. Team Blacks till the day I die right now.
You can't say you're against that. It's definitely, you get us all canceled immediately. What are you talking about?
Now the Irish are going to come after me.
But no, they, what do you call it? I think one thing about this episode that is just like really just interesting, I would say, just compared to the other ones, is like it made the dialogue and the political intrigue, like there wasn't a ton of action in this one, obviously, it made that so much more interesting. And like the tension you feel in a lot of these moments, I felt was just so much more impactful. Like the scene between the kids all fighting and like Cole trying to egg on Strong, like all these scenes, I feel like that was missing in those first five episodes. And I feel like they really nailed it in this one. And again, I think that's just where it comes down to. Like, yeah, they could have compressed those first five or whatever, but I honestly think if you had someone who hadn't watched the first five episodes, they could dive right in on this episode and really not be too confused with almost anything. Like, there wouldn't be a ton they would miss.
You're right. No, they would probably catch up if they had, like, any amount of, like, you know, viewing literacy. Like, they'd figure it out pretty quick, I think.
Yeah.
Like you were saying with having the kids in there, I think that does make a big difference. And it's something I didn't really think about early on with House of the Dragon, but in Game of Thrones, like there were the parents obviously making power plays, but at the same time you were watching all the kids grow up and also carry on like their parents, like aspirations and, you know, deal with the other kids at the same time.
And those were constantly a liability too for every major like adult character. Like that was like the one thing they were trying to protect was their kids and they were always in danger. So
Yeah, bringing the family aspect into it, I think, is it added another wrinkle that I really like. I also really like that scene between Damon and Lanira, I think is her name. Lanira.
Yeah. Great back and forth.
Yeah, like where she's like, I know you don't have eyes for me, but like I want to see you happy, and like you need to get back on your bullshit, more or less. Yep. Mm-hmm. So obviously he's about to show up and be the best stepdad ever to Rhaenyra's kids.
I thought that she was going to survive getting burnt up by that dragon because they're Valyrian. Like, I was like, I guess that's just a Targaryen thing.
I think it's just Targaryen.
Just a Targaryen thing. But I didn't know. I don't know, like, the back lore of, like, the old Valyria or anything like that. I just assumed that none of them burned. So when she did that, I thought she was trying to, like, burn the kid out or something. Like, I was, like, trying to figure out where she was going with it. But that dragon, by the way, her dragon, sick. That is one of the coolest dragons I've seen in Lord of the Rings.
Goat dragon.
It's so fucking cool.
Game of Thrones lore. That's the one that Aegon the Conqueror rode.
No, that's the Black Dread. That guy's dead.
That dragon is like a big deal, though, I'm pretty sure.
He is a huge deal, but he's dead at this point. And they mentioned
I'll talk about the one that burned her alive. I think that dragon's important. Vhagar?
Maybe? I don't know. That's a massive damn dragon, though. It looked cool. Dude, and it looks different than the rest of them. It has like a smooth head.
You know, it's like little face it was making where it like didn't want to do it. Posted it. It was like with the I can't remember the movie where the black guy's crying and he's like holding the gun up. Wesley Snipes. Someone posted that. It was like Vhagar getting ready to burn when you're alive.
Mm-hmm. Literally, yes.
All right.
I thoroughly appreciate. I think my favorite part of this episode was any of the Lair Strong stuff. Mm-hmm. Obviously, spoilers at the end. He kills his fucking family, burns him alive at Harrenhal. But I thought that was like the strongest stuff for the episode. It was very like menacing, like lurking shadow villainy type thing. I thought it was pretty solid. Especially, I like that you said that we wish we saw more of like more Harwin, especially because like I guess after Rhaenyra's kid's father.
Yeah.
But I did worry. I didn't worry, but I was thinking like. I don't know how much I want to see like this battle over like, I mean, we're going to see obviously like the idea of whose father the kids actually are and like who she's having kids with will be important. But I almost like, I was like, I kind of want him not around. Like, I don't want this to be like a hand to hand, like I'm the father type thing. And now it's not an issue.
Mamma Mia.
He's super dead. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want Pierce Brosnan to show up and be like, no, I'm the dead. So I did like the end of that. Like it felt very sinister and kind of a perfect ending to the episode. How it all tied together.
Yep.
What else has that actor been in? I was trying to place it last night.
Which one? I had no clue.
The one who played the
Arwen Strong, right? Oh, the nut job brother. Yeah, no, he looks super familiar. Like I couldn't figure out if his like some James Bondy type character or what? It's one of the Strongs.
Matthew right? Needham. It looks like nothing we'd know.
His face is so familiar.
Unless you're a fan of the BBC soap opera Casualty.
Yeah, I can't say I am.
Fuck. Yeah, I thought just like his Sherlock. Connection to Allison and like wanting what?
Sherlock.
Oh, he wasn't.
That's right. Yep. There we go. And let's see, Doctor Who. Oh, and Chernobyl. Wow.
Matthew Needham?
Yeah. I'm on his IMDb. On his wiki, it's terrible. Like, oh, okay. They have nothing listed, yeah, but on his IMDb, they got shit.
Makes sense. I like the connection to Allison and obviously like the Hand of the King and all that and her father. So I thought it all tied together really well. I thought it was a very, you could see so many different moving parts in the background too. And I mean, it was a good episode. It was a very good episode of that show.
I know what it is. He looks like Mikey Day from SNL.
He does kind of look like Mikey Day. That's a good observation.
I wonder how much he gets that.
Gotta go watch. What was that? Is it Cake? He really does look like him. Holy shit! With just a bigger jaw. Fuck it. Is it Cake was maybe the worst program ever aired in television history. It is. It was an abomination of a show, and he was in charge of it. So, or the host.
It was a show based on the trend.
Yes, it was a Netflix show based on that TikTok trend, and it was so fun. You got to watch it if you haven't. It's one of the all time like great bad movie things I've ever seen.
They just go up putting knives into things.
They have all these contestants come out. They put out like these things, and like people have to pick out which one is cake. Like,
I mean, it's that's bad. That's an idiocracy.
It's a cake. listener question from what is this? Backyard Dick Rate 69.
I love that. What does that mean? I love that. He's not, he knows he's not professional. He's like, I got a backyard dick rater.
Here's the question. Think Allison is going to give Laris a crumb of coochie?
No.
I don't think I don't. So at all. Again, yeah, I don't know where this story goes.
She kind of seems like a fool.
I will talk about this at the beginning of Rings of Power because we had some people upset with us talking about too much future lore being spoilers. Two notes.
Yeah, I saw it.
Apparently, this part of the story was changed. I will say that. We will avoid saying we will dial back like future lore stuff. Lord of the Rings, I'll reset and talk about that in a second. But apparently, this part of the story, apparently it was left open-ended who burned them at Harrenhal. So I think this was changed. So I will say, anything we've said about future stuff like still could be up for interpretation or change. I don't know if it's true or not, but I was watching some of the breakdowns to make sure I didn't miss anything. And I do believe that was changed or altered.
Mm.
But my overall point being, like future speculation, we'll be careful of that. No, I don't think he's going to get any coochie. Not at all.
No, not a chance. He's ugly, mm-hmm. which also doesn't help.
Also, I mean, and also King Viserys. King Viserys is how is he still alive?
He looks like he's been hanging out on the old beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is.
He looks like my left testicle.
Which strong is that? What's his name? Laris?
The one that killed them? Yeah. Harwin's brother, yeah.
The way that he said, like, you owe me a favor, I'm going to call it in later, it felt like very gross. And like a good Game of Thrones character.
People are saying a lot of Littlefinger vibes off that.
Well, yeah, for he definitely does. Like, but he's much less suave. He's much more creepy, I would say, than Littlefinger was. Or at least front-facing, whatever that means.
That's House of the Dragon. Anything else?
I say, if you're going to send people in to blow up somebody's fucking castle, like maybe don't have a bee, like your sigil, like pinned to every single one of them. Maybe not a great idea.
It's literally his personal.
He's like a beetle.
It was like a bee or some shit. Okay, yeah, maybe don't put that on people. Don't put your personal sigil on criminals that you're having commit a mass killing. Maybe not a great idea.
Stealing TVs.
Yeah.
That is an all-time one of my favorite parts of Role Models.
So fucking good. That's on streaming. I think I might watch that tonight.
That could be any bald guy. Good name. Mike Garvey. Stealing TVs. all right. Rings of Power next. Rings of Power. I would say probably the weakest.
Yeah, by a decent margin.
But there were some things that I found very redeeming from this episode. Like, I think as a whole, I didn't, but there were like little parts I loved. So let's kind of go line by line. Again, and I'll say this. We will avoid, there's one little thing at the end I want to talk about, future lore stuff. So we'll mark that spoiler. We will avoid like future, people were upset about, I think we talked about the Numenoreans and like, what they do from here through to the Lord of the Rings, like movies in that timeline in the books. We'll avoid that. Anything that happens in Lord of the Rings, though, we're going to reference. Like anything that's referenced or talked about in those movies, that's fair game. I'm just going to tell you that right now. So we will reference that. Like that's just going to happen. We'll break it down by characters and groups. A lot of Harfoots this episode.
Too much Harfoots.
I didn't mind the Harfoot song, though, at the beginning.
Yeah, that was a cool song. I don't know what that actress's name is, but it was good.
I liked it that they used that to montage along some of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Speed things. It was like a fast-forward button with a soundtrack.
Nerd of the Rings did a good breakdown, too. They're in a lot of familiar territories, too. It's Emmenmul where they meet Gollum, right? That's that area where they first meet Gollum post
in Lord of the Rings.
It's a lot of areas that were at the end of Fellowship of the Ring, where they fought the orcs, where Boromir gets sent over the water, the falls of Rauros, where they send him over in the boat. the area where Argonath's going to be built, where they come in on like the little canoes or ships and they see the big statues. The marshes are right over there where they, where you have all the, it's the marshes of what? I'm sorry.
The dead marshes and in that, but that it's not the dead marshes yet.
It's not, which
later
guess we may see that again. See, saying that this is a thing that I'm going to say is fair game. Like that's just in the movies.
It's the, literally the prologue to the first movie.
It's the stuff in between we will avoid. That's the bar I'm setting there. So they journey across there. The rest of the Harfoots fucking hate the family. They're trying to get them to like remove their wheels and leave them behind to die. We get some good Meteor Man stuff. He looks up at the moon at one point. He talks about he feels like he is potentially a problem. He's starting to speak a little more. He heals himself after saving the Harfoots from wolves.
Yeah, cool. He does the arm thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does the big arm thing and like kind of like shockwaves them back.
Hurts his own arm.
There's also I want to know too in terms of theories and who this could be. One of our Discord users, Tilkaline Trio, said he's speaking. How do you say? Is it Kenya? Is that the language? Yeah. He is speaking in that language. Said no follower of Morgoth would ever speak like that. While he's healing himself, he's saying that. So he's like, that really only further implies that this is a wizard. Obviously, this is not. There's really no chance this is Sauron. Would not make it. Would be weird at that point. And we also meet those like weird people in white who I just looked like the villains from Leftovers.
The acolytes or something. I think they were saying they are like.
Yeah, they go to the. Some people thought that one that turns the camera, I don't know exactly what the name of the character is. People thought in the trailer, the promo material for the show, that was Annatar, that was pre-Sauron. That doesn't seem to be, maybe it is, but I don't think that's the case. I think they're just like a different type of like followers. I don't know. But people like assume that that's what that was, and they're like, that has to be it. But I think there's a lot of questions there. So we meet new
characters. They're gaunt as hell. Those motherfuckers need a cheeseburger or something. Like, they're skinny as fuck, and wearing all white too, made of horse.
Real frail. So they're on the trail of old Meteor Man. So that was the Harfoots. The next group, Adar, which I thought the first Adar scene. We'll group Adar and then Arendir and Bronwyn and Theo. Our young boy.
That's not even mentioned, Theo.
Between these two shows, a lot of young people, like a lot of like just kids between these two episodes. I love the first Adar scene with him in the sunlight with the orc.
He rocks.
He does. He's
killing it.
He's a good villain.
That scene where like, you're just saying when he burns up the orc's hand, like that is fucking cool. And that whole scene where he's like propping up his troops, being like, I forget what he says, like the time of the orc has come or whatever. Like that was cool. Shades of some cool stuff from the movie too. And it's like, I think his reaction to a lot of things in this episode was very interesting. And that's what makes me more intrigued to find out like his true identity, which I feel is pretty clearly not Sauron at this point.
Yeah. I don't think it's Sauron either. That was okay. So yeah. So I like that. He implied like, this is going to be dark soon. Like, I know, I wish you could feel the sunlight, but my guy, it won't be here for long. Like, which they're very clearly in Mordor according to the map. So that's what's going to happen. Half of the village, Bronwyn gives one of the worst pump up speeches of all time.
Yeah.
Just half the village is like, nah, we ain't feeling this. We're out.
That other guy gives an even worse speech, but like everyone's just like, hey, he just makes more sense. He's like,
they're like, yeah,
I don't want to die.
So I don't know his name. It's Meat Butcher Guy. It's the butcher.
Yeah.
He brings a group, including Theo's friend, Theo's loser friend.
You knew that motherfucker was going to die. The second you see him go with that group, I'm like, that guy is dead as dirt.
He goes up to Adar and he thinks Adar is Sauron. And Sauron beats the shit out of him, basically, and then forces him to kill Theo's friend, which could be one of two things. Again, I'm going to mild spoiler alert. This is, I don't think, a crazy spoiler alert, but it's for theory, I'll say it. Sauron, and this is mentioned in Lord of the Rings, Sauron doesn't go by that name. They don't say the name. So it's either him heavily, very like just simple as can be saying, in that episode, I am not Sauron. Don't fucking call me Sauron. Or it's maybe him just not liking hearing the name. And that could imply maybe he is Sauron. Or maybe he's such a loyalist to Sauron, he doesn't like hearing it. So there's a bunch of different things. But that was, like you said, you were implying that, Ken Jack, when you're mentioning he had a lot of interesting lines here. Like, that was a pretty pivotal moment in the episode.
Yeah, I feel like he's very clearly not Sauron. And I feel like Sauron would be too proud to be like that offended by the use of his own name. But yeah, I don't know. That was a very interesting moment between them. And I'm still loving the orcs. All the orcs and just look so goddamn good. It's just beautiful. Especially, I rewatched some parts of The Hobbit recently. It is it is a crime. Those orcs were like a crime against humanity.
And the
not in a good way, like the actual orcs are. Like, they are just disgusting. And then these orcs just look great, all practical, great voices. Oh, just love them.
Arendir and Theo are kind of friends now, teaching Theo how to fight. And then Theo shows him the hilt. And then we see in the tower, which was clearly a tower of from Morgoth followers back in the day before the elves started protecting it. We see that part of the hilt is shown in like a carving in the mountain or in the walls that stabs through somebody. So very clearly something incredibly important. He refers to it as a key to something.
Yeah.
To what we don't know. And then Adar and his soldiers are on their way. And Arendir tells Bronwyn like soon. He says days or hours.
That's it. I feel like you could do better than that.
You got to give me a better estimate than that.
Yeah. I mean, the time frames never make sense to me in Lord of the Rings. Like, they do kind of skip around. they never really tell you how much time has passed in any of it.
If that's like, in the meta. I mean, I feel like in the micro of that situation, it could have been like, I don't know, they're X miles away or whatever they use in leagues, I guess.
Three days or hours?
Because once he says days, you're like, in your head, you're like, all right, we got to prep. He goes, or maybe hours. You're like, well, then that's just, you can't prep for both. You get one, you got to give me something in the middle.
See, like Aragorn, great guy. He comes back when he finds out all the Uruk-hai are coming from Isengard. Tells Theoden, hey, they're like 2 days away. He tells him like the pretty good timetable. I mean, what's his name? Arondir. Yeah. I mean, work on that, dude. You can do better.
A lot going on in Numenor. Farazhan is one of my favorite characters in this show, but I love the buildup of this character. I think he's proving to be an impending piece of shit. He kind of is a piece of shit.
I love his line where he tells his son, he's like, he does like the Aziz line where he's like, I bet on all the horses so that I always win. Like, that was a great politician line and a great moment for him character building.
He's talking to his son a lot. You can see he's really laying the groundwork. Like, he's not really into the idea of going to Middle Earth, but like, they can gain a lot of things. They can set up ports. Like, they can really lay the future of Numenor, and clearly he has his eyes on the prize of running it. His son goes to blow up one of the ships that's preparing to leave. He's caught by Isildur. It still blows up. Isildur saves him, and Isildur kind of uses it to get back in the good graces of Elendil, his father. That kid seems like bad news. Kemen?
Both of our Kevin?
Was it Kemen?
Let's just call him Kevin. I kind of like that guy. Does look like a Kevin.
I don't know his name. It's spelled like K-E-M-E-N.
He looks like a Kevin. I like it. I'll just keep it for him.
Muriel, who is, what is it, the queen consort? What do you, I mean, these regent. Two shows are regent, yes. These two shows, just there's lots of very similar titles. She talks to her father, the king, who is kind of still hiding off in the back. He's more sick than people realize. He tells her, don't go to Middle Earth.
What the hell, man? Snip, snap. What?
Yeah. It's he's like, darkness awaits. He clearly can kind of see as like, there is dark. We know what the darkness is. It is Mordor. Like, we know what the impending doom is in this story. So she's on board, but she hears that from him. And then you have Galadriel trying to get Halbrand to commit to going. There's a lot of back and forth there. And then Halbrand finally commits and will go with the troops. Isildur going over as well. That's kind of the wrap up of that story. You can get more complex, but the big thing, and the more, I guess, controversial thing, I watched a bunch of breakdowns on this. Nerd of the Rings, which has been easily the best breakdown of this, Zink's not totally on board with the theory in the story. Elrond, Durin, and all Gil-galad stuff. I love the dinner scene.
Very good.
I think Durin's a great. Durin and Elrond are maybe my two favorite. Like, they're
it's
back and forth.
The best. Great.
Yeah, I wish they, and like, obviously it's too late to change or anything, but like, I hope they lean more into that bro dynamic between those two, because even when you go back to like the original Lord of the Rings, like the Legolas and Gimli dynamic was incredible too. So they, I think that's something they could really use to their advantage.
So Durin lie makes a lie about the table. He says the table is like they're eating on basically a thing that is reserved for only like very monumentous things. And he lies about it just because his wife wants a table, which I think is fucking hilarious.
The tables. Keep talking about these tables. We got to get that. We got to Photoshop it in. Freddy Krueger keeps messing up my tables.
Where?
Gil Gallant's he's a douchebag. He's a dick.
But that scene is so weird, right? Because like Gil Gallant is like yelling at Elrond. He's like, you gotta tell me this secret. And it's like, well, obviously the answer to your question is yes, because he won't tell you. Like everyone knows the answer to the question. If it was just no, he would say no. Like it's, I don't know if that's a weird elf thing, but that I feel like the tension of that was kind of subverted by that the way that they set that up.
Yo. Gooch here with time code to skip ahead to if you want to avoid hearing book spoilers. I guess you'd call them that, even though it's just guessing at this point. But no Guy's Groceries games like Jeff used to do. I'm actually watching Better Call Saul. Just started it. So if you want to avoid the book discussion, skip ahead to 121:30. It's a pretty good finger.
So major spoiler stuff here, too. Like, I'm going to talk a little bit about... So, I'll say this beforehand. This is a new thing. This has changed. This is a brand new thing created for this series. So this is, again, why... Again, I'm sorry if we said too much in past episodes. I apologize on that. But also, I prefaced it with the fact that we also don't know if that's how any of this shit will play out. This is new material.
Yeah, it's one adaptation. It's totally different.
Yeah, so he says... He tells Elrond that they're... In the attempts to hide one of the missing Silmarils, there's a battle with a Balrog, an elf and a Balrog, over the tree, and lightning struck the tree, and the good, you know, the amount of good and evil that were combined through this fight shot down through the rocks into Khazad Dûm, where the elves are and all that, and through the roots in the rocks creates Mithril, which he then claims to Elrond they need in order to preserve their race, because they are dying off. Thoughts on this, Ken Jack? Thoughts on the story I've concocted? Because some people do not like this.
I don't care. I'm not a Tolkien scholar. Like, if they want to add some new shit in and make it interesting, like, I'm totally down with that. Like, it's Tolkien's world, right? And like, you shouldn't totally bastardize it or something. But there are great fantasy minds out there right now. Like, when you look at even George R. R. Martin, whatever. Like, you can do something new within this material, and I like that sort of idea of Mithril's origins. I don't know like how much I love the application of it towards like the survival of the elves and like just how that would work out, but I don't know. By no means was I upset by that invention. I think it's fine.
Yeah, it didn't bother me. Again, I'll reference Nerd of the Rings, great breakdowns, watch them. Not a friend of the show, just good breakdowns. Helps me explain some things that I'd maybe not totally get. He said, too, that not that different, honestly, of a change from when in Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, Elrond describes Arwen dying to Aragorn, which is not that, which was created for the movie, like her reasons for dying. And you're giving it's motivation for Aragorn. And some people don't like that change. Some people do. I didn't mind this in the movies. There's some other theories that maybe he's just lying to Elrond too, to make it up, to like give a reason. Elrond even mentions too, like when he's reciting this story, he is kind of implying the fact that this may be a story that isn't true. It's just, it's a myth. It's a legend across Middle Earth. So there's a lot to unpack there. I imagine that's not the last we've heard. It's not like A to Z, we're done. That's why Mithril's there. Like, I feel like there's still some more to unpack, especially as those things come to pass. Cause like this now Mithril, like will lead to Celebrimbor making the rings, right? Like, at least that's what we have now. Like, is that the sole reason? Is the sole reason just because they're elves and they're going to make these out of, you know, an unnecessary need, or just for their desire for longevity and eternity? So there's a lot to unpack here. Didn't bother me. I'm not a Tolkien head. I'm not like a purist in that sense, but some people were bothered by it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bothered by like little changes. Read the fucking books.
Yeah.
Just read the books, because like stuff is going to get changed when you go from page to screen. Like, it just has to happen. Like, with no matter what you're adapting, it doesn't matter if it's Lord of the Rings or fucking Where the Crawdads Sing. Like, shit's
Shit's going to get moved around a little bit.
Usual questions. Took a line trio, the person who made that great comment about the Meteor Man, said, any different thoughts on Sauron? I don't think we've changed much. I think we got a ton from there. I think we feel like it's not Adar.
Yeah.
I think that's for sure. Rule out Adar, rule out the Meteor Man.
I think rule out what's his name as well? Who's the dude in Numenor? I'm blanking.
Halbrand.
I think rule him out. I think if you look at the struggle he's went through off camera, essentially, in the world, like, it's so clear he's not Sauron. Like, why would he have that private battle, going back to grab his sigil and fighting his inner struggle, whether or not he wants to go with them to Numenor? Like that all happening away from a group of people and not being performative. Like, that's just not Sauron.
That moved me off Sauron. I'm now on the Witch King thing. Cause I do think I think that's key. What you just said there, it's not performative. A lot of what he's done has been performative. I'm like, oh shit, he's manipulating. But him doing it privately, I don't think that's so, like, why would he do it privately? Like, that just doesn't.
It makes no sense.
And then another question, do you think that the Mithril really is the secret to the elves surviving, or is that a tall tale made up just to get it? I kind of hope it's the latter. I think that'd be sick. Like, I think it'd be kind of a cool little reason for them to get in and take shit from the dwarves.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't buy this shit at all. Like, that feels cheap. It feels very cheap.
Yeah.
I hope this show wouldn't do that.
Like, yeah, so again, Kendrick, you said a more down episode. I enjoyed it. I think the down compared to the others, but it felt like kind of a setup for the rest of the season almost.
I just felt like this episode, no progress was made. Like, in the last episode, the big hook at the end of it is like, hey, we're going out, we're sailing, the army's all getting together, they're getting on the ships, they're about to leave, and then we just have another episode where, okay, now we're actually leaving. Like, it was just a little bit of a prank to you. We're going to head out. Like, I feel like the buildup and execution of that last scene in the last episode going into a whole nother episode stuck on Numenor was kind of bullshit. And it really kind of carried over into the rest of the stuff. Like, didn't get a ton of movement with Elrond, didn't get a ton of movement with Arondir, kind of still stuck at the tower or whatever. Some like cool scenes like you were talking about, but I feel like there just wasn't a ton of progress made, if that makes sense.
I would agree with that. I enjoyed it, but I think it was definitely down compared to the other. That's a very good short review of that, Ken Jack. Andor now. And then we'll talk Don't Worry, Darling. Andor, fucking, man, I don't know, A+. Fucking, it was awesome. It was just an amazing start to the series. What did you think, Ken Jack? I think you share the sentiment.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really awesome. A lot of Rogue One's adjacent vibes, where it's like a lot of it's driven by incredible production value and some good screenwriting as well. The characters that they established in these first three episodes I thought were really strong. Outside of Andor, the world, like that little tiny like just sort of speck outside of what we're used to in Star Wars, like the gutters, really. I think that's really, really cool. And just some of the other... So where the plot is going right now, I really liked. And I also liked how these first three episodes were very much like Clone Wars, where it's a self-contained arc. And like, we're ahead an episode, and like, I feel like it's not like a total, like a spoiler to be like, hey, it doesn't continue. That was very clearly an end. That three episodes ends in like a closed off arc going into the next one. But like, I kind of like that. And I think that's something that was one of the extremely strong with Clone Wars, is like getting to have these all these mini adventures throughout the season. And the fact that we get a lot more episodes, it's between this and season two, is like very exciting for me. I don't know, really pumped up for it.
Someone we from Discord, Spark, said that on Discord. He said, do you think it's going to be like this the rest of the way? We're not spoiling it. We've seen episode four. It would seem as though the beginning of the series, there are going to be 2-3 episode arcs. It seems like there's an arc coming. There's another like mini arc that just keeps connecting, much like a Clone Wars. I don't know if you got that vibe from the fourth episode.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, for sure. In like that same vein, if that makes sense. I wonder how much Filoni was involved in this at all. I have no idea, but I don't think he is either. But like, you could kind of feel that footprint, if that may, or like that outline from Clone Wars in this.
Gooch, what'd you think?
It was awesome. I mean, right off the bat, I think setting up with that opening scene kind of immediately set the ground of like what to expect moving forward. I mean, going to that like mean, that's a strip club, and it just got club music banging. Like, that's immediate. Like, this is going to be a different kind of Star Wars. It was, and it looked great too. It wasn't just like a cheap scene. Like, everything in this looks as close to movie quality as you're going to get on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked, and the dialogue was great. It wasn't cheesy ass dialogue, which is a lot of what we got in Obi-Wan. That was one of my bigger complaints with Kenobi and Book of Boba Fett, was the dialogue was just rough at points. This dialogue was great. There were some great scenes. When he's talking to Stellan Skarsgård's character, that whole interaction was great. Like, really cool. I loved it.
I'm
very excited for this series. Very, very excited.
Yeah, somebody said, here's a review from our Discord as well, said Andor has potential to be my favorite from Cotton Eye Joe and then parentheses pop punk cover. I love reading the Discord names.
Some good ones.
Andor has the potential to be my favorite Star Wars product because it truly feels like it's treating its audience. We have intelligence. You can understand a more complex world, more complex. That's just very spot on. It's a Star Wars for adults. Like, they do, like, it's
a great observation.
It's crazy. It is. I'll note off the top, again, spoilers, not for future. We don't fucking know. Well, we do know. They all die. Rogue One. That ending scene of episode 3, fucking fantastic. Mm-hmm. The attack on the town, everyone clanking and making the noises, and Fiona Shaw's character, when she says that's what a reckoning sounds like, and then she says, you want to worry when the sound stops.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's cool-ass line. I like that too. That dude hitting the tower bells. Like, I love that whole, like, back, every time they did it, I thought it was awesome.
Nicholas Britell brought the heat.
Yeah, great soundtrack.
Good soundtrack.
Yep.
Good soundtrack, which is awesome because Kenobi was a massive letdown, even though I think Natalie Holt's a great, great composer. It just wasn't there. But this sounds great. Ooh.
There's just so many little things. Like, Luthien, Stellan Skarsgård's character, him, like, flying in on that transport, like, that sales rep. Like, that guy's, like, going into the city. Like, that's such dumb, like, stupid Star Wars shit that we don't see, but it's cool to see it. And it gives you, like, a significantly more grounded, like, real, not everything's great. People are poor. The world sucks. And overarching on top of that, I don't know why. I guess I expected more stormtroopers off the top and, like, to really feel the thumb of the Imperials in the first three episodes. But having these Primor Authority, which for reference, it's Preax Morlana is a group of systems, and they have this corporate, like, company that is overseeing everything. It's corporate security officers, not stormtroopers.
Full on cyberpunk. I love it.
They got Ebony.
It added such a different feel on that. Kyle Soler plays a Cyril Karn, who's this just like this just slimy
weasel.
Yeah, this try-hard weasel. Yeah. He's perfect. It's such a different feel.
I think Robbie was saying he looks a lot like Ramsay Bolton. Very true. Yeah, it's like that. It looks like Ramsay Bolton, like diet, basically diet Ramsay Bolton. And I love that look from him.
We get a little more of Cat. We knew Cassian from Rogue One is a grizzled guy. He kills that friend of his, kills people pretty quickly off the top. We got it. He's got Wally with him, by the way. B2 emo or whatever.
Yeah, I love that. B2 emo.
we learned he's from a different planet, from Canary, which there was a mining accident or a project that the Imperials fucked up. He's not from the planet that was, I guess, that character was known for in canon. That's going to come into play, you have to assume, at some point. The Ferrix planet to live on is great. I'll say it. People are horned up for a character. They're horned up for Bix. A lot of simps already. And
who could they?
And her husband dies. So now people are really amped up, which he sucked.
I kind of liked him in the first. I liked him in the way where it was like, I'm actually interested in these side characters.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you get introduced to, like, side characters in a show and you're just like, holy fuck, no, right off the bat. But right at the bat, I was like, all right, I'm interested in Bix's storyline at least. Like,
cool
this
name.
This isn't going to be 5 minutes spattered here and there where I'm just like, get through this scene. And I like her. I like Bix's her a lot.
Husband and coworker, Tim Carlo. That's such a perfect. That's our good friend Coley would love that name, Tim Carlo. Shot dead in the street.
By the way, Tim with two M's, if I remember right from the closed captioning.
It is.
He played second base for the Red Sox in 1988.
the Luthen shootout scene too. He tells him to kill Cyril, by the way, at the end. He's like, just fucking kill him. And I'm surprised they didn't, but I'm glad they didn't because it set up that great chase at the end with the explosion.
Oh, I was trying to remember where I remembered Bix from. It's Morbius. Duh. I was like, she looks so familiar. Oh, I can't place it. That's the female lead from Morbius. And she was in, ironically, another Pedro Pascal thing, Triple Frontier and Six Underground. What a run of movies.
Jesus.
True Detective as well.
Also, new Father of the Bride.
What? Oh, yeah. Holy shit, dude. I feel like an idiot. I was like, damn, she looks so familiar. She's been in like a million things I've seen.
I like Luthen telling him kind of like the different rules of being like a rebel, basically, or a, you don't say the word rebel, but he's like, you know, finding an exit, carrying things that can't, you know, you just, I like that you're seeing kind of the inner workings of them figuring out how to be a rebellion and how to stand up and, you know, fight and kind of go under the radar. So it was just awesome. It was just, I can't say enough good things. Oh, and Sergeant Linus Mosk, the Scottish guy.
Yeah, that dude, he's my favorite non-main character. He rocked.
I have a hard time comparing him to a character, and I can't think about who he reminds me of, but I just love him going in and being like, yeah, man, like, I got your back. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. He's just such like a, he's like, I'm here to help. Like, I don't know what to like compare it to, but I just love that character.
Yeah, he was very funny. And I love there being like, they're basically their entire corporate security team and are just like a bunch of bouncers. Like they're just a bunch of like not stormtrooper shaped guys. Yeah. Like, dude, I love them all. And I love him dropping a full on shit and just being like kind of like the explainer for that little rat fuck and like telling him like all the little things that they do in the towns. I just loved him.
Great. Yeah. It's very similar to Cloud City, basically. Bespin. They're just, you know, they're contracted out. They do enough to kind of get by with the Imperials and not have them fuck up with their shit. That's why the main guy at the beginning is like, hey, I know these two guys died. They were killed by Cassian. But let's stay off the radar, clean it under the rug. They were breaking rules. Like, let's not have the Imperials come in here. I won't say much about episode 4. There's not a lot of Easter eggs in this thing at all. Almost none. Right. I think we have, in the first 4 episodes we watched, there's, I think, one Easter egg, and it comes in the fourth episode. And when I mean Easter egg, I mean they say a name, and that is it. It's almost, you almost miss it. But episode 4, I'll just say, I think, Kenjack, we enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed the first 3, right?
Yeah. And like I was saying, because it's like a close to arc, and like you get a lot explained or put together in that first 3 episodes, like this one hits the ground running. And like, I think it's very interesting where they go.
There's a couple visuals and like parts of things that we know from Star Wars we've never seen, and you just like again, it's not like fucking 3PO waving at the camera breaking the fourth wall type stuff, but it's little things that layer in perfectly, and you just, as a Star Wars fan, you go fuck yeah. And even if you're not a Star Wars fan, it looks cool. I'm very excited. I'm thrilled. I didn't get my Fantastic Forecast at D23, but Andor being good, we can rest.
Huge.
We can rest now. All right, so those are all the shows. A lot to get to. It's going to be a lot to get through every week. Review time. Don't worry, darling. I'm excited to talk about this.
Why?
Came out this past weekend. Did not make a lot of money. Did not do Avatar.
I'm surprised by that just because of Harry Styles being involved. That did shock me. I thought it would be way more just commercial.
The Avatar re-release made more money. Alice and Jack are lucky to be living in the idealized community of Victory, the experimental company town housing the men who work for Top Secret Victory Project and their families. When cracks in their life begin to appear, exposing flashes of something much more sinister looking beneath the attractive facade, Alice can't help question exactly what they're doing in Victory and why. Florence Pugh, Harry Styles, Chris Pine, Olivia Wilde, Gemma Chan, Nick Kroll, directed by Olivia Wilde, laced with a bunch of pre-release drama. We don't need to get into that, but the movie was definitely carrying that stink going into theaters. And I will note before we give our reviews, and I'm not saying Kenjack's about to do this, I think some reviews absolutely gave it negative reviews because of the drama.
Oh, yeah.
I think for sure. Kenjack, we'll start with you. You saw it first, I believe. I think you and Gooch may go on at the same time. But
yeah, we both went on Thursday.
Oh, wait, yeah, I went to the show. Can we also just talk about our theater experiences?
I think that should be off the top.
Jeff,
I did not see it in the city, so I did not get like a city crowd.
Okay,
we both had the same sort of experience, and we both went on the Thursday night previews. I think for both me and Gooch, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, our audiences, the rest of our fellow moviegoers, were mostly Harry Styles super fans.
Yes,
and they made the experience very unique, in that they very clearly weren't there to watch a good movie; they were there to see Harry Styles. And that every single time he came on screen, they were like hooting and hollering, laughing at him when he was performing badly, going nuts. Like, what was yours like exactly? Because that was basically the summation of mine.
It was unlike anything I've ever experienced before. So I was in the big auditorium at Regal, which is like, I think like a 200 seater. And it was probably about 150 people in that stadium. Me and maybe 8 guys were in there. And I think I was the only one that wasn't with a girlfriend. R.I.P. me, but it was hilarious. Like, so first, Olivia, and this isn't a spoiler too much, but Olivia Wilde does come on the screen pretty early in the movie. The second she comes on screen, you just see about 30 different girls boo.
Yep.
Boo. Booing Olivia Wilde. Absurd. They would laugh every time Harry Styles did anything, which I don't think he was that bad, but we'll get into that in a minute. But they would laugh anytime he tried to do any kind of dramatic anything. Mm-hmm. When the twist does happen, which we'll talk about that, the whole crowd just started like just dying laughing. I'm not kidding. Like people were just laughing. It was very fun. It was a very fun theater experience.
Yeah. Easily the best part about the movie was the theater going experience, I would say, by like a huge margin.
Yes. It was awesome.
But outside of that, I think just from a pure movie perspective, it's definitely like in the back of my mind watching this, like all the drama surrounding it, but I'm just like, at the end of the day, if it's a good movie, I don't care. Cause like, there's plenty of movies with bad productions that have made great movies, right? Like very troubled directors, not getting along with cast members, them yelling at each other, but like the product ends up being great. And like, I was like, maybe that's the case. Trailer for this was so cool. Olivia Wilde, solid and book smart. So like maybe she could do something cool here. But I think with this movie, it fell into my, and this is like, I think the first thing I tweeted when it came out, it falls into my absolute least favorite category of movies, which is movies that think they are doing something really, really cool and smart when they really aren't. And that is like the definition of this movie. It's just kind of chock full of pretty shitty cliches. And it's just painful watching because like you could tell Olivia Wilde throughout this movie. And like, I think she helped with the script or something too. Like she thinks it's something really, really like groundbreaking. And really the only thing good about the movie is that it's like nice to look at. Like that's the one super redeeming thing. Like Florence Pugh's awesome, as she is in like every single movie. She's nice to look at, yeah, sure. But like the movie was like shot well. There's some interesting shots and shit like that. But I think there's some very big problems with Don't Worry, Darling, and I think it kind of stems a lot from the cast and the casting decisions made. And Pugh, obviously the star, like we were saying before, best actress or actor in the movie by a huge margin, massive margin, just from a pure performance aspect. I don't think this is her strongest performance, but like for her, that's like not a bad mark because her work is always so good. It's like just slightly below that. But every other person in this, like Harry Styles was such a square peg to this movie's round hole. Yeah. It is insane. And on top of that, I disagree with you, Rich. I think he had a brutal performance in like a really standout way, which was made worse by the fact that he was acting up against Florence Pugh, who is a monster. Like it made him look so much worse by comparison. And maybe in the bubble, he was fine. But like seeing him act up against Pugh made him look so bad. And Chris Pine, like he gave a good performance, but he was such a bad fit for that role. Like he should never have gotten that. And like, I don't mean like he should have turned it down or something. Like it just was not a role for him. And like Nick Kroll, why is he in this? Why is Nick Kroll in this? I'm not saying like actors can't like have range and go do different shit. Nick Kroll is like, it stops you in the middle of your tracks to be like, oh, this is a movie. Like that's Nick Kroll. Like it's not like, and you could say this is kind of the same thing about Harry Styles, but Harry Styles was in a Christopher Nolan movie. Like, but this dude, like he wasn't bad. It's just, he didn't stand out or he stood out. And I think what made the acting made worse is the fact that Pugh and Styles had no chemistry, like absolutely zero chemistry. They did not like come across as a loving couple at all. And the pairing was so inorganic. Like The scenes where they try to make out, and you, I know you guys saw this scene. The one scene where they were doing the make out, not make out, I was like melting into my chair, sucking in my teeth. Like, it was so bad. But again, I think one of the more frustrating things is, like, from a technical aspect, like, there's cool shots, some cool uses of color.
It makes you feel like you're in the desert.
Yeah, for sure. Like the Palm Springs feel like
you feel the heat off the screen. Like, it's a really, it was shot very, I didn't like the way it was edited, but the way it was shot was, yeah, that was really cool.
I agree. And like it is shot in Palm Springs, and like you could see almost that same sort of shooting style in the movie Palm Springs. Like, they really highlight that desert feel, and I think that part was cool. But then if you get into the story aspect of this, I think, I'm not sure if you guys felt this way. I felt when I started watching this movie, like, this, it very clearly wasn't supposed to be, it's not in the 50s. Like, they're not in the 50s. My thought process was like, this is some sort of self-contained cult out in the modern day desert.
Like the village.
Like, yeah, right? Like the village. Yeah. That was the vibes I got from this movie. I'm like, it's clearly not in the 50s. Like, where, I don't know what the situation is. So like, when the twist came, and Harry Styles, by the way, who they tried to ugly down, and it was.
So we into spoilers now?
Yeah, I guess.
What's your score?
All right. My score for this is going to be, it's hard. I didn't write it down because I was like, I don't even know where I put this. It's like, again, Florence Pugh, great job. Technical aspects, some shots, some shit like that, like the symmetrical circle shit, cool. Everything else is pretty bad. And so I think for that reason, I dump it somewhere in like the 40 range, 39. I think 39 I'm happy with. And it's just, it's not the worst movie. It is just so frustrating because you see like the pieces there for something better, which is a problem we've had with a lot of movies, I think, this year. And just, it was just a very frustrating watch for me because, like, again, on the technical aspect, they were doing some great things. And then just from the back end, a lot of things were just done wrong. So, yeah, frustrating ass movie for me, to say the least.
Gooch, would you rate it?
This movie felt like it was written and made by like a college sophomore at USC. Like, the writing just, and the, like, the overall plot just really tanked this score for me. Because if that hadn't happened, I could look past some of the mediocre acting and like probably put in the 80s. But because of the twist and how much I really fucking hate that back 20 minutes, I'm going 65. Which is 20 points higher than King Jack. But I think there are a lot of merits here. There are parts where I was intrigued. I thought Chris Pine was better than what you gave him credit for. And I thought Harry Styles was, he was fine.
He was bad. He was just not a good fit for that cult leader. Like, he wasn't the right actor for that.
Yeah, I thought if he had just been given better dialogue to deliver. I thought the dialogue was so cheesy at times. Although when he did say good girl, another audience reaction, literally half the girls in the theater just moaned, which was like I said, one of the most unique experiences I've ever had in a theater. 65 out of 100 for me.
People want us to have different opinions, and so here we go. We have one. I think it's a very average movie. I don't hate this movie. I think the twist, which is all we're going to talk about in the next 10 seconds after I give you my score, the twist is the biggest thing to talk about. I don't think Harry Styles is very good. Didn't bother me. Didn't take me out of the movie. He qualifies as one of those things where it's like, I didn't like that. I'm just kind of forgetting about it, which I said this year about, what movie did I say that about? Where I said, I don't think it was very good, but I, fuck.
Vengeance? I don't know.
Elvis. Like, he wasn't Tom Hanks bad. He wasn't very good.
Tom Hanks bad.
It didn't kill me. It didn't like take me out. I have a movie of 72. I don't really hate this movie. That's the biggest difference Ken Jack and I have had in a movie in a very long time.
Close to that level. That's
1997 of Romeo's plus Juliet.
That's never going to be top. That won't be top.
Because what about this movie puts us in the 70s for you?
I think Florence Pugh is fucking fantastic in it. I think if the twist for me feels too cheap, and I'll tell you what, if the twist had been like really fucking good, I'm with Gooch. I think this is like in the 80s for me. I don't know why. I think stylistically it's good. I enjoy
the build-up of it. This whole movie is based around that twist, though. It's all going towards that twist, and the twist isn't good. That is a structural flaw that you put up.
I think the difference between the two of us is the twist for me doesn't blow me away. It just does. It just kind of like flatlines out for me. It's like, okay, where you really don't like it, right? I think I'd say that's the big difference, right? Like you really truly hated it.
It just wasn't interesting, and it was unearned. Like it just wasn't. Didn't feel like they had done enough to misdirect you from that happening.
So
you
know what
I
mean?
I will put that on my score and my feeling.
And by the way, about as subtle as a brick to the face, this entire movie.
the
subtlety of a literal brick to the face, like talking about gaslighting. Like you cannot do a worse job of trying to make that clearly your message.
I didn't mind how it ended either. I will note, I'm going to see this again. I will admit this for sure, swayed by some of the comments going into it. I had seen this after we all seen it, saw it last, saw it after all the comments, all the reviews. I didn't hate it as much. We'll see. I'm going to watch it again. Spoilers, though. If you do not want this to be spoiled, which, I don't know, maybe you don't.
Yeah, but this is rated the same as Uncharted? One of the best movies of the year.
The twist is, this is all versus
better
all.
Better than Minions, though, you have it.
The twist here is what's the best way to describe it? They live in, by the way, someone compared it to Serenity, by the way.
It's the Truman Show, but Harry Styles eats pussy.
Yeah. By the way, no one so clearly has never had to actually eat pussy in their entire life than Harry Styles in that scene. You see his head, he's just like in here going like this, like, whoa, whoa. Like that's a guy who's so hot that every girl he's ever eaten out, which probably isn't much, has been like, oh, Harry, you're so good. And like, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
He wrote a whole song. He had a number one hit about eating box. I just
say what? That's exactly because he wants to get actual more pussy. Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like he's trying to trick people.
They live in a virtual reality. They live their life at home. The characters move. I'm going to say their actor names, Florence Pugh and Harry Styles. Things aren't going great. Harry Styles likes to follow this like cultish leader played by Chris Pine, finds a way to live in the 1950s in a virtual reality, a metaverse type thing where it would seem as though, right, that the men in this world, when they go to work, they're actually like leaving this reality to go to work and actually make money so they can live, while their wives are basically kidnapped and just live within this reality. And he like forces her into this reality, kidnaps her, whatever, and makes her live in this reality. So that's the twist. The twist is that they're not only in the 50s, because I did think for a while this was like The Village, like you mentioned, Kendrick. I was she drives out and
I'm happy it wasn't that. I'm very happy it wasn't that for what it's worth. If I had to pick between these two twists, I would pick the one they used.
Right. No, so that would have been like, see, that for me, I would have landed where you were like, holy, that would actually piss me off. And like, this is The Village? Like, this is just 2022's The Village. For me, it was definitely a dud. But not at like a this was so fucking stupid and so, but this isn't the trees, the plants are killing people from The Happening.
Yes.
I was kind of like, eh.
Sure.
I was like, okay. I kind of like the way it ended. I like, you know, I'm glad they didn't do some over explanation of how it ended and like, hey, this is what happened to her. Like there's, I mean, I guess the assumption she escapes, but for me, it's just like, okay. Cause I liked everything going up to like, I didn't mind. I was like, oh, I'm kind of enjoying this. Like, hopefully the twist is like really sick. Cause then you know what? I'd love to be like, fuck man. Like we're really hating this movie just because like Olivia Wilde might be a piece of shit. I mean, I don't know. I love Midnight in Paris. So again, art, not the artist. Whatever.
Chinatown. Great movie.
The Brown still. So, I just my thing is it was just very average. It was just very, very, very average. It was just, I don't know. That's where I landed.
Here's the thing.
I literally laughed when I left theater. I'm like, man, I don't know.
But here's the thing. The way you've described it, you're like, this twist was not that good. Harry Styles, co-lead of this movie, not very good. Like, you're describing these things that should take this below an average movie. These are all things that should put it below.
I'm for sure excusing Harry Styles. I will say that. I'm excusing that off because I liked Florence Pugh for me, balanced it out enough where I was okay with. Like, he was just fine. Like, it was, in the grand scheme of things, it was fine that he was just whatever. The twist for me, I don't even want to call it not good. I just think it was incredibly baseline average, like, okay, sure. Like, it's a shoulder shrug. I don't think it was horrible. That's for me why I have it higher. Because if I did think it was horrible, this goes way down. It just, I was thinking like, man, I really want to hate that, but I just can't. Like, I think for me it would be, and I'm not saying your hate of it is fake at all. So don't take that the wrong. I couldn't hate it. I thought about reasons to hate the twist. I just couldn't hate it. I don't know.
I can't wrap my head around it.
Genuine. I can tell your hate is genuine by the way you're describing it.
We should hate this movie.
He's at a 65. You're not that much further off from me though, Goose.
We should hate it because they paint podcasts as the villains.
They also do that. That's true. Although he's a vodcaster, I guess. Although I guess we're all
what happens to a motherfucker when he listens to a podcast?
Like, he's fucking incel Harry Styles. Great twist. Right.
I'm gonna read a message board now.
Yeah, the accent
thing. Never heard of 4chan.
The accent thing was at least a little bit explained. You know what I mean? Like that kind of like, because that was in the trailers. I was like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, he is just British in the movie or whatever through that package. But it sounded like partially American through those parts where they're in the simulation or whatever.
Can we talk about this?
Oh, yeah. Okay, this dance scene, minus 50 points on the spot. That was 10 minutes long, dude.
Look at that boy dance. Look at the boy dance.
He's doing like the fucking Charleston for 10 minutes.
My main problems in the movie, I think the twist, the story, I think a lot of story I liked. I think the twist was average. For me, that kind of average. Again, when I say average, I'm in the 70s. I know some people grade and view things differently. The biggest thing for me, I do think this movie lost a lot of punch to me. It needed to be a little shorter. Like, I do think that a conciser, more kind of like punchy movie, it could have been better. And I think more people would have excused maybe a very bland twist, or for some, bad twist, if the movie had kind of punched a little more quicker.
I don't even think it's like... I think it's hard to be like, this twist stinks. Twist. You know what I mean? I feel like it can't be like, oh, this twist stinks. It was a really shitty... It's like an M. Night bad twist. You know what I mean? Like, from like his more recent shit. It's like, it's just... It's not good, and it's bland, I think, is like maybe a little bit above where I would put it. It's just, it's no good and unearned compared to like what everything they had established in the movie. And you know, it was another thing we didn't even get a chance to mention. This movie had the fucking audacity to set itself up for a sequel with that Gemma Chan bit that didn't wrap up. They did that. You know, they did that. You know, the reason that she said, it's my turn now, like, and they didn't close that loop. They think they would get a sequel out of this. Either that or they just forgot. Either way, no good.
The Kendrick, I got to tell you this because the ending was changed from this movie off the original script, which was written by like Van Dyke's grandchildren or something. But it Dick Van Dyke's.
Is that why he did the fucking Charleston for 20 minutes?
Maybe. I don't know. But the original ending had her like wake up in 2050. And then track down Harry Styles and like fight him and then fight like Gemma Chan's character, I think, like in 2050. And there was like a much longer ending.
That would have been significantly worse. That would have tanked this if they tried to do that.
I will say, I think if you don't watch a ton of movies, especially you don't watch a ton of sci-fi, you probably enjoy this movie a lot more than the average moviegoer, because that twist wouldn't seem so predictable and so generic when we've seen it just so many fucking times now in the genre. Like that twist has been done. Like, it just has been done. And it was very obvious what was happening.
This is a good review that goes to kind of what you just said. If this had come out 15, 20 years ago, somebody said, don't worry, Darling would have crushed if it had come out in the 1970s.
Yeah.
With the twist.
They would have loved that.
It's a very 2022 twist. This review, look, I like it more than you. I don't like it as much as this person. This blurb is great. From Paula Prieto, a shattering blow to contemporary idolization. I love that. Like, this is knocking down the pillars of modern society in the way we think.
There's nothing shattering about this at all.
The funny thing is, cliche. No matter the level you like or dislike this on, the three of us, all gravely below where we anticipated this movie being.
I thought this was going to be one of the best of like this year, like especially after seeing that trailer too. That trailer was so goddamn good. I had such high hopes, man. Like, and again, even after all this drama around the movie happened and all that shit, my thought process was like, this could make the movie even better. Like, sometimes when look at David O. Russell movies, like, he's fucking like cursing out his actors on set, patreon like shit, Kubrick and like all that shit. It could make good movies. Like, that doesn't need to be something where like it tempers your expectations. But like, man, just so bland. And bland is a good way of putting it, which maybe by relative to our expectations of it hurts the score, at least in my brain a little bit more. I don't think I let it or anything, but like, it just, what a letdown. I feel like even with your guys' scores, you can admit big letdown.
Oh. I mean, I gave it a 72. I thought this was going to be in the 90s. Like, I thought this was going to be like one of the best movies of the year. So that is, I mean, that's a significant drop. We're like, we should actually do that. That'd be a fun task for, maybe we'll do it for next episode. Rest of the year, pre-rate what you think the movies will be for the rest of the year. That might be fun. I would have said 94, 95. Like, the trailers were incredible initially, then it all unraveled.
And Booksmart was good, too. Like, the pieces are all there. Like, this should have been. And Florence Pugh in the lead. Like, man, dude, like, it makes me feel bad for her because she was, like the just shining star of this movie along with, like, some of the production value stuff. Because, like, the 50s shit did look cool as hell. Like, it all looked brand new. Like, that production value of it would look great. She was awesome in it. And just nothing else really materialized, which is just the most frustrating thing. But so I need to know what you guys actually thought about the Gemma Chan shit at the end of it.
Terrible.
Were they setting up a sequel, or they just forget to close the loop?
What do you mean? I took it as like she was like a part of the patriarchy, like is what the messaging the movie was trying to send. Like she was like, what is it? Internalized misogyny. Like, I don't know the right words for it, but like she was continuing the machine. Yeah. Continuing the simulation, but she wanted to be in control now.
Okay. So she killed him, says I'm taking over now, but has no further impact on this movie. But so I feel like they're setting up for a sequel, or they just didn't close that. I feel like it has to be one of those things.
See, I think the movie was just trying to make a point. It was just,
but that's not ambiguous. Even it doesn't feel ambiguous. It just feels like they fucked up.
Like I said, I think the script was fucking terrible. Like, I think it would have been a lot better if you had someone come clean up the script and work on that ending. Like, there is something tighter. There is something interesting you could have done there. Like there really is. And the messaging, I don't hate it. Like it's
just not subtle.
It's a cool idea to explore, but it just executed terribly with that twist. Like the plot just, Jesus Christ.
It's like, what do you call it? Harry Styles wants a tradcath wife is like the whole idea of the movie, but like they could explore that world. And like, I think in a lot of things, like especially in thriller movies, like the idea of gaslighting or whatever, like that is always really cool when like, you know, the character's sane, but everyone thinks they're crazy. But you as an audience member don't know if they're actually going crazy. Like maybe it's Shutter Island and he's the crazy one after all. Like that idea is really cool. But I feel like the way they approached this was without an ounce of subtlety, and that crushed that sort of like, I don't know, like the expectation for what they were going to do with that. I feel like if they just removed a lot of that and allowed it to just exist, or with like a degree of subtlety, like I could have been a lot more interested or at least invested in what was happening.
Here's a review that kind of echoes your sentiment, Ken Jack, and your feelings on the movie. A steaming pile of dog shit covered in Macy's department store perfume.
I think Macy's might be too cruel. It looked good. Like I described it when I blogged it. I said it's like a brand new Lamborghini filled with baked beans. Like it's just absolutely gorgeous to look at. Nothing of value really inside. It's just there was nothing there. But yeah, again, look gorgeous. Florence Pugh was really, really awesome. And like, you can't take those two things away from this movie at all. I think you could take away a lot of other things. But Pugh rocked and
man, like LeBron on the 07 Cavs.
Literally, yes. Like, we should put up the graphic Harry Styles and DWD, and it's just the Tony Snell stat line.
Jeff, you might agree with me here, but like, I don't think this movie works on any level without Florence Pugh. Like, I'm not sure who you can plug in there to really carry that movie from
start. Yeah, she was great. I mean, I loved her in this movie. Like, I thought she was like great. Yeah. I actually thought she might not be, because I was like, maybe you're, this whole like press thing is like she thinks she did a good job, but like, it's kind of crazy. She was great, and then
she's in the hospital right now.
Insanely mediocre average movie.
Mm. Yeah. Hopefully she gets better soon.
Well, that's Don't Worry, Darling. Three very different scores, 65.
I feel safe saying this. I don't think any three of us will ever watch this again for the rest of our
life. I'm going to watch it again. I will. Because I do.
Okay. After its theatrical run, I don't think any of us will ever watch it again.
After the initial review bubble, no, I will probably. But that's the case for many movies we watch.
I can't wait for the little whatever they're going to do. They're going to do like a docu series or like
bonus features.
Someone will do like a little series on the dude, behind the scenes of this movie.
Did you see how they had like 40 staff members sign a document saying nothing bad happened on set? It's like now you make me think it's happened more by doing that. It's like that tweet of the guy is like, my not a human trafficker shirt has raised more questions than I thought were answered by the shirt. It's like, well, now I think that something happened because you did that. Man,
I wish Chris had been here. Chris hasn't seen it yet. We're gonna have to make.
I think Chris would have crucified it. He might have had a lower score than me.
Chris, it was weird. Chris like randomly likes it though too. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. He's hard.
I imagine he'll dislike it. We'll see what he says. He's gonna give his thoughts on it next week. Next week, Pearl and the Woman King.
Both so good, by the way. Again, different ways.
The more we're gonna be upset when Mia Goth doesn't get nominated for anything.
Yeah. Man, that 9-minute take.
Yeah, her monologue in that movie is fucking amazing acting.
Unreal. Did that 7 times. Nailed it in 4. That's crazy.
And then just quickly on the radar for movies coming out, 2022 movies. We are very close to Black Adam, by the way. I am amped for that.
Did you see, he put up a picture, The Rock, where he's like, I never got to go on a walk with my dad, but here's me going on a walk with the actor that portrays my dad in Young Rocky. It was just like a little strange. I don't know. He's a weird dude, but that's kind of like the appeal of Rock.
Hocus Pocus 2 and Bros are coming out. Bros here is like pretty solid. Smile 2. They're doing like weird.
Yeah, that screener's been sitting in my library, and it's collecting dust. I don't think I'm going to wait until that comes to
streaming. Marketing. They're putting people smiling behind home plate at baseball games.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. I like that.
Hocus Pocus 2, I just don't care enough about to make it the main review. We'll talk about it briefly, but Pearl and Woman King will be main reviews. And then the week after that, we have Hellraiser in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then Halloween Ends. Oh, I am criminally excited for Halloween Ends because I can't imagine how dumb it's going to be. Like, if that movie, I want Halloween Ends to have like the stinkiest ending to that franchise. I'm so excited for that movie.
I want how they're going to explain away Mike Myers, but only for him to come back in like 10 years.
There's no way he dies. There's
not a chance.
I can't decide if I want him to die or not die because I don't know which one will make me more angry. Mm-hmm. I feel like if they kill him in a way that's so unsatisfying, I'm going to be like, what the fuck? But then if he stays alive, I also might be like, why is he alive? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Verbal meme Mike Myers holding Mike Myers. Why won't you die?
Oh, Jesus. Man. All right. That's it. For Ken, Jack, and Gooch, I'm Jesse Lowe. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.